Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio. Before we start our main feature of the evening, we wanted to give a special condolences to the friends and family of Sir Oliver Humperdinck, who unfortunately lost his battle with cancer this past weekend. Oliver Humperdinck was a guest on this show when he was appearing at the Cauliflower Alley Club last year, and Kendrick and I had the fortunate privilege of speaking with Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and we wish him nothing but the rest in peace in the great ring in the sky, where I'm sure Nature Boy Buddy Rogers is already offering him a cold one. So, on with the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Online, worldofwrestling.com presents your number one action and comedy radio show based around the world of professional wrestling. OWW Radio.
The King of Kings goes back on his throne.
The champ is here.
And be the man.
You gotta be the man.
Whoa. It looks like there's a new sheriff in town.
And man, is it about time.
Hey, this is not a mirage. This is real. This is here. This is now. This is the second coming.
Now your host, Alan. What's his name? Wojcicki? Wojcicki?
Your house started to shake. The heavens opened up. And God himself spoke to you and said this.
Wojcicki? Is it?
It's Wojcik. Alan Wojcik. Do I really need to write this out for you? God.
Now, your host, Alan Wojcik.
The biggest night in the history of this great organization.
We are live. We're not taped. We're not a podcast. We're not a 24/7 network that never has guests on. We're not a moron squad or anything like that. We're the number one show in wrestling today. Okay, I can't do the Eric Bischoff thing. It's not working for me. Welcome to Online World of Wrestling Radio for March 22nd, 2011. I'm joined by Spug from every program ever created on Online World of Wrestling Radio on this network. I apologize, my mic is crapping out.
Let's try it again. Whoa.
Welcome to having a brand new computer and your microphone giving you issues. This is so awesome.
You're better now.
Yeah, I hope so. There's a reason why we just had Tony Schiavone. Oh my God. Yeah, WCW quality sound. Thank you. There's a reason why Tony Schiavone was on there, because he didn't answer his calls when we said to him, Tony, we wanted you to be on the show. Fact. Only two people that we try to contact from World Championship Wrestling dared to step into the interview room with us. Originally, Mace was supposed to be here. However, he's typing away at a computer, making more money than we are right now. So we wish Mace nothing but the best. He'll be in, he'll be out on the show. If the date March 26, 2001 doesn't mean jack crap to you, then obviously you are not a fan like me of World Championship Wrestling, which used to be the NWA's version of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, which if you go back even further with the part of Georgia Championship Wrestling, if you go back even further than that, then you're in black and white and looking at Vern Gagne and going, whoa, where'd he come from?
You're letting your Skype control your microphone settings. Dude, your mic is horrible.
Oh, how do I get rid of that?
See, now it's good.
Okay. I didn't do anything.
Your mic was absolutely horrible there for a minute, but continue until it gets horrible again, and then I'll cut you off and let our guest talk.
Well, if I click automatically adjust your settings, it'll take it away, so I don't know what's going on. I don't care. All right, 10 o'clock Eastern, Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell is going to be here with us. So we figured we would save him for the main event, and we would have our semi-main event guest, who I swear Alex Riley has been listening to this show because of the way he introduced The Miz last night. He has worked for Global. He has worked for Motions in Georgia. He has been a part of WCW Pro, WCW Worldwide, WCW International, WCW Nitro. I think he may have been a part of WCW Thunder. I think he worked as a host at the WCW Grill in Las Vegas. I can't confirm or deny that. And there's a movie in
the Alan.
He is Scott Hudson. Welcome, Scott Hudson.
Wow. You started to sound like Charlie Brown's teacher there for a minute. Boy, I didn't know if you were just falling asleep going through that list of canceled television shows or what was happening.
For fans that aren't aware of it, you have been involved in, and may have listened to this before or read interviews that you and I have done, but backtrack for fans a minute and just give them a brief recap of how you even got into being a part of professional wrestling, because it is an interesting story.
Well, I was an athlete in high school, and when I graduated high school, I was not a good enough athlete to do anything in college, so I was a disc jockey. And then, I kind of married up those two things, and I became a, high school sports play-by-play announcer. Did, baseball, basketball, and football for, a couple of high schools, down in South Georgia where I'm from. Ended up doing some college football as well, broadcasting. Moved to Atlanta with my career, was still a mark, and still am, actually, and went to a few independent shows with, my best friend Steve Frazak, and, we went to a show, and the ring announcers started screwing up names left and right, getting guys, I mean, just completely wrong. It would be like if you saw John Cena standing on the other side of the ring and saying, "Here she is, Beth Phoenix." It was that ridiculous. And so we went up to the promoter and said, "I don't know what you're paying this schlub, but I'll do it for nothing." And he said, "You're hired." And off we went. That guy, that promoter, was Joe Pedicino, who ended up putting me on the local Georgia television show, as play-by-play, and then on to Global, and it went from there.
So were you as bad as Michael Buffer, possibly, in his WCW era? Or were you good enough to...
As bad as Buffer? Oh, Buffer was fantastic.
Oh, do we have a clip, Sir Rockin? I know you have it. Please play the clip. My favorite Michael Buffer clip of all time.
Before you play it, it's got to be Bret the Hitman Clark, right?
Exactly. Hit it.
Reigning United States heavyweight champion, Bret Hitman Clark.
Terrific.
Yeah, we were,
you know what? I don't know if you ever had him on the show, Alan, but it might shock you. But you know, I got to hang out with Buffer a good bit when we were, because he was at every pay per view that we did. And believe it or not, maybe funniest guy I met in the whole time I was in wrestling. The guy just looked so stiff and such a male model and so professional, but backstage the guy is a complete riot. Just one of the funniest guys ever.
Yeah, I didn't know it until I started watching the UFC stuff with Spug and Mace. Is that his brother's mate, Spug, that does the UFC?
Yeah.
It is
his brother. Bruce.
I wasn't sure, because the first time I'm going, okay, is he doing an impersonation? And then Mace goes, "No, that's his brother." I was like, oh, okay.
No, let me tell you. You do not ever say, and I'm not even going to say it on your show, you're having lawyers get involved. You never say, "Let's get ready, blah, 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 blah," or he'll have a letter sent out to you, and, you know, you don't even joke around about that intellectual property and that proprietary stuff he's got. He's deadly serious when it comes to that sort of stuff.
So it's almost like Donald Trump trying to copyright the words, "You're fired."
That's pretty much the same thing, but hey, you know, if it's making money.
That's amazing. Now, our later guest in the evening, Marcus Bagwell, when we talked to him earlier today, he was like, "Oh God, you got to tell Scott I miss him. I was talking to him." But
yeah.
Is it true you guys have known each other going back to almost your beginning in the business?
Absolutely. Mark and I, you and I were talking about this earlier, and I'm not going to say for sure because I don't know where Mark trained and that sort of thing, but I know that our first TV tape, his first TV taping, the first time he wrestled on television was the first time I called play-by-play on a television show. That I'm sure of. I'm sure he had been training on some school and maybe worked a few indie shows to, you know, to get his, you know, to get his timing down and all that and to learn, obviously. But the first time he was on TV was the first time I was on TV. That was 1990. Right at 21 years ago.
Tisk tisk.
Yeah. Many fans may know it. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Keep going. I'm being poked by my wife for a second.
Oh, dear God.
Beg your pardon.
No, we're keeping it. Not that kind of poking.
No, I think the kid's going to bed, so if you'll excuse me for just a second, I have to go say goodnight. That's important.
Okay, yeah, that is the important part.
Now, is saying the kid's going to bed, is that what the kids call something else now? Is that,
No, he has the young one who has been a part of the program before.
Oh, it's not like taking your talent to South Beach or something like that.
Rock, do we have the clip available that we played for Road Warrior Animal?
Oh, of her. Oh, God. Yeah. We'll put that in a second. Yeah. Well, back to you, since you're the guest. Many fans may actually remember you before you ever even got to WCW on a little program that aired on ESPN. What was it like to be in a young in your career and all of a sudden they're going, all right, so you're going to be part of this thing called Global and you're going to be on ESPN. Congratulations.
That was great. at that point, my only television experience had been the local, Georgia Independent Group, and that was only for like 6 months. You know, I'll tell you the truth, Alan. There is such a great story. Just maybe not writing a book or anything like that, or a documentary, but just hanging around one night to tell the whole backstory of the entire Global Wrestling Federation is incredible. There are a lot of, weirdo stories you hear about wrestling. You go on any website and find, 1,800 bullet point list of stupid, weird stuff in wrestling. Everything about Global, I know for a fact, is true because I lived it, and you wouldn't believe it if I told you. But it's one of the most incredible, one of those things, like if you would send it out to Hollywood, they would say, well, we can't make this. It's just not credible. It's not believable. And that's really what happened. It involved, the Nigerian email scam. It involved, selling of a farm to get money to rent a building. It went on from there. It was crazy.
It does sound like something it sounds like something David Lagana sitting there going, and I'm typing now.
Sure. As an aside, I'm always amazed that I've never seen one of the big groups use that Nigerian scam stuff. You know what I do for a living? I do criminal investigations and I deal with that a lot. And I'm thinking, wow, they prey on people that believe wrestling is a complete shoot. That's what those Nigerian scam artists, that's who they want. That's their target. So why not play that around and, make an angle out of that? Nobody's ever done it.
Now, were they filming in the old Sportatorium that the Von Erichs had run in, or where was that show filmed?
Yeah, we were in the Sportatorium. We rechristened it the Global Dome. It fixed it up a good bit. I don't know if you ever got out there.
No, but it was, wish I had.
Really, really a rundown place. And then the Global folks put some money. It didn't make it into a show place, but it was nicer than it was when Kevin and his crowd ran it. But, there's just nothing like the history of walking into that, into the Sportatorium, which is now gone. It's been razed and, I don't know what's up, probably a parking lot now. But if you can picture this, like a funnel, imagine a funnel that they dug down into the ground and put the funnel into the hole. And where the top of the funnel is ground level, and then built up walls and put a roof on it. That's what the Sportatorium was. But then they put a floor over the middle of the funnel, but there still was runoff. And, they could come in there and just hose down that whole place, and the water would run straight down to the center of the building and down this drain. It was almost like a toilet. God, I don't want to say that because it wasn't that, but that's, you know, it was a really oddly designed building, and it had so much history. And, you know, to go stand in there in the office, where Fritz von Erich and that entire world class, you know, where those legends were made, and to stand in that office and, you know, just soak it all up. That was great.
It almost would feel like that would be like, if that place still existed, that'd be something like the Ghost Hunters crowd would go to because of Gino Hernandez passing away in that time frame and all the great talent that worked in and out of there. It would almost be like walking into Madison, one of the versions of where Madison Square Garden used to be, or the Omni, and going, okay, Ghost Hunter guys, have fun.
You know, they've got those world class, like the Heroes of World Class, and
that
the
really
other
good.
DVD they did. You look at those things and then just count the ones that are dead. It's frightening.
Yeah, I think it was the Heroes of World Class and said that just did work for WCCW. There was like 40 people. I'm just going, good God, enough of it at that point. How long after Global did WCW come calling, and who actually was the person that said to you, guess what, you're hired, you work for World Championship?
Well, you know, when Global went away, as happened, I was, even the whole time I'm doing Global, I'm still doing the local Georgia show, because we were only going out to Dallas every weekend and doing the TV there for ESPN, and then on the, you know, we would one Saturday a month, it would take a month's worth of Georgia shows. So I'm still doing Georgia, rocking along, and it was doing really well. You know, they were drawing, you know, for an independent, they were drawing 200 to 300 people a show and running 3 or 4 nights a week. So they were doing really well, not making money hand over fist, but surviving. And it became fairly popular with a good many of the guys in WCW, because they lived here and would watch the show. And out of nowhere, I know I've told you this story. I think I've said it on your show before, but quickly, I'm at this really swanky restaurant in Atlanta, being given the Employee of the Year award at my real job, right? The one I went to college for 1,000 years and all that. My real career, I'm the Employee of the Year. Great! I get the award, you know, clap, get the plaque, the whole drill, sit down, and the waiter comes over and says, are you Mr. Hudson? I said, yeah. And he goes, I have a phone call for you at the front desk. And this is a real nice restaurant. Okay, cool. So I go up to the front desk, and there's a phone. This is the days before cell phone. This was 95. Our cell phones were as big as, like, what Paul Lee used to carry around. And it was Eric Bischoff. I mean, not Eric. It was Paige. It was Dallas Paige. And I'd gotten to know Paige from, you know, him liking the show we did in Georgia. And he goes, if you ever talk to Paige, it's, yo, Scooter. This DDP, you know. I said, Paige, what's going on? And he said, I got somebody who wants to talk to you. And it was, Scott, this is Eric Bischoff. I said, Eric, it's a pleasure. And he said, we got an opening. We want you to come down and try out tomorrow. Sure. So that was it. Went down, made the tryout, did okay, and I was in.
That does date you a little bit that they're calling you at the restaurant, but hey. We're all about tradition.
It was 1995. It was a simpler time.
I'll save that clip for a little bit when we play our game with him.
Yeah, we'll save that. If you're listening in, fans, Scott Hudson has joined us here. We're going in a little while to test, because as I said, Scott basically did every WCW television program there was. So we're going to test. Not only myself, but Scott and possibly Spugs know your WCW theme music.
Oh boy! So,
yeah, we played we played a little bit on Saturday when we were watching the UFC event, and we're both looking. We're typing to each other, going, "Oh God, this could get ugly." Buff Bagwell said, "No, I'm not playing any of that." I said, "Okay, you're out of it."
I want to flash forward a little bit.
Flash.
The night, there are several key moments that are within that are legendary within the career of WCW, and most people don't realize how far back WCW actually goes. You know, the days of the night. Most people just focus on that period of time with the NWO and the Monday Night Wars between them and WWE,
right,
up until they were bought out in 2001. and I actually kind of want to focus on that for a moment. The night that Goldberg finally became the man.
Right.
Hogan put him over in the Georgia Dome where WrestleMania is going to be this year, and that place was absolutely electric on television. After Nitro went off the air, how long did it take for that place to come back down to earth?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of that's a great question, and there are a lot of dynamics that play in that. And for better or for worse, WCW, you know, certainly considered Atlanta its home. It was. But the fans in Atlanta also had a real affinity for WCW because it was like the home team going up against, you know, the New York team, the WWF. And so when you had that, just conflagration of emotions from, oh, this is a great show. Oh my God, this is a huge star that just had himself made way. Wait a minute. We're in the Georgia Dome. Holy God, there's 48,000 people or whoever it was. Oh my God, it's our team. It's our guy. He's a University of Georgia football player. He was an Atlanta Falcon. You know, so it was all of that just stirred up and into this volatile mix that erupted. And it was, you know, they don't let you stay in the Georgia Dome for hours and hours and hours after the show's over. They run you out. But as far as feeling the emotion, it was palpable for hours after. If you can imagine, somebody tailgates at a wrestling show, really, because it was a Monday night, but it was like the tailgate started after the show was over. There were people milling around the Georgia Dome out in the parking lots and, you know, just high-fiving each other and, you know, still just screaming about what a great show it was.
Yeah, well, we talked about this yesterday, and it's always been a topic of conversation on shows like this and in the Genesis Forum and Online World of Wrestling. Was that a mistake by Eric and by corporate to give that away free on Monday Nitro and not do like a non-title deal in Georgia Dome or a dusty finish and then go to a pay-per-view and make millions of dollars there? Or was it, as many people say, including the folks on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD or the Monday Night Wars DVD, Eric was so blinded by the Tuesday morning ratings he couldn't do anything else?
That the second one is correct. From a strictly business standpoint, yeah, they should have saved Hogan and Goldberg for a pay-per-view. They didn't. But at that point, and you and I had this discussion the other day, that I don't know that it would have certainly increased the buy rate of whatever pay-per-view was coming up next. But I don't know that it would have increased it an awful lot, not because it wasn't important, but because we were just selling pay-per-views like crazy anyway. It didn't matter what we were putting on. You know, eventually that would have caught up with us, but it wouldn't have added enough buy rates to make that big of a difference when taken into consideration with this. Every Tuesday in WCW, it was all about the overnights. Did we beat them? It really was a war. And Eric, who is, I told you before, a genius, I'll follow that guy into battle anytime he wants to go, knew that if he, with the build he had given it, and with the payoff he was going to deliver, that it was going to do a huge number. And there was no way, you know, it wasn't were we going to win, it was are we going to, you know, double up their number. And that's what he wanted. That was the goal. It came to the point where we were making so much money that we were going to be profitable no matter what we did, and he just wanted to win the ratings. And so that's why it was on free television.
Was there a lot of animosity in the back that night when it became known that Goldberg was going to be the new heavyweight champion from some of the older guys, maybe a Nash or a Hall?
I can tell you that I don't know. I didn't sense it. But that's because they had their own dressing room. You know, they didn't associate with us. But it was known that it was going to happen, you know, months previous. We just didn't know when it was going to happen. And then when they announced that we were going to the Dome, it was, you know, the worst kept secret in wrestling that was the night Goldberg was going to go over. As far as animosity or tension, if there was any, it didn't come over to the announcer's dressing room or to the you know, the international pro wrestlers dressing room, or anything like that. It was, you know, the A-list guys had their own thing, and they may have been, you know, tearing down the walls. I don't know. We didn't hear about it.
Well, how many locker rooms were there backstage? I mean, does Hogan have his own one? Does Bischoff have an office? Take us back. What's the actual locker room like at a WCW event, especially?
Well, now, it does depend on where you are. I mean, the Georgia Dome is, I don't know if you've ever been backstage. Well, you've been backstage at Tropicana Field. It's like that. It's, you know, it's God, as big as all outdoors. You could have literally your own, every guy could have his own locker room pretty much and something like that. But, in most places.
At a regular pay-per-view, let's say you're in Phillips Arena or you're somewhere that's like St. Pete Times Forum or somewhere.
Did you?
Yeah, or in Cleveland, is it still the same type of situation? Hall Nash had their own deal, Flair's got his own deal, or the majority of the talent dressed together?
Pretty much what you just said. The A-list guys, if their contract, and I don't know that it was part of their contract, it may have been, but if they were promised or contractually obligated to receive a private locker room, that's what they would get. And it wasn't like off limits. You knew where they were and you could go knock on the door like anybody else's office. If you needed to go over a finish or go get them for a pre-tape or something like that, they're at work. But that was, and then there was one or two or three huge locker rooms for football. If you ever played football or baseball, you got your own locker, and there were so few of us there compared to the number of lockers we had available. You had like six or seven lockers to yourself in the locker room. But that's where the great unwashed, the rest of us, kind of like the professor and Marianne on Gilligan's Island. The first couple of years they didn't even give their name; they just said, "And the rest are here." We were the rest on that Gilligan's Island, and we had the one big communal locker room.
Yeah,
but we all know.
Go ahead.
So, we all know Scott Hudson secretly demanded his own dressing room and got it. So I'm just wondering, what kind of demands did you make to WCW management? Did you want all orange Skittles, no blue M&Ms?
Actually, the only demand that I had in my contract was that I shared a locker room with Spice, and that was denied.
I would have gone with Fire, but hey, that's my personal favorite Nitro girl. We've heard stories. I've been at TNA events with you until you left the organization, and seen the production notes that are given out to seemingly everybody there, that from the moment go till the end of the program, it's listed out. When Bischoff was running the show until he was departed, and then the craziness that was Russo Ferrara came in, what was it? How much did you guys know? You, Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, Zbyszko, sitting at the desk. Did they give you an actual run sheet, or were you just sitting there going, "Okay, so I guess this match is next"?
Oh no! It was nothing like that. That show, I think I've still got one laying around. I don't know. If I do, I wouldn't know where to begin to look for it. But say it was the two-hour version of Nitro, we would be given the format, that's what it was called, and it was, 20 pages, 30 pages, because you gotta remember, this is cable, broadcast cable. This isn't, filming some local indie wrestling show. The first page would be, the first line item would be, pyrotechnics. Second one would be what Vince always called the ballyhoo, which was just the beauty shots of the crowd, that sort of stuff. And then Tony would hit the live open. You're looking live at a jam-packed Spectrum in Philadelphia. And everything was not scripted, but everything was laid out. And then if we had the Skittles replay of the week, or Lee Marshall on the road, or whatever it was, we had to get all that stuff in at exactly the right time. We had hard times to make because it was a network show, so that it wasn't as scripted as you would think. just the match was another line item. And we would know pretty much who was going over because, you know, the matches would have two or three bullet points that they were trying to get across. You know, if it was the artist formerly known as Prince Iaukea in the match, we're supposed to put over, you know, Paisley at ringside as well as the Prince. You know, put over Paisley, you know, bullet point. And then, you know, finish would be Prince over with the whatever his finish was. But that's all we would know. And then we would just call what we saw. And then we would have, usually Terry Taylor in our ear. If I heard Terry say this once, I heard it a million times. It was, ask the question. Scott, ask the question. You know, he never wanted you to, you know, tell the viewers what was going on. Just ask the question and let them figure it out. And if you'll go back and listen to the commentary or from those shows, you'll hear a lot of times out of nowhere, we'll just say, what's he doing here? What's going to happen next? Why would he do that? That was Terry's input. Ask the question. And yeah, but that was really all we got, was just line items. Boom, boom, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way down 20 pages worth.
And that obviously differed from when you were sitting in a studio doing Worldwide or Pro or something like that. What was that kind of a day like for you? And was there a particular person you enjoyed working with, or you sat down and said, oh, God, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to let you say it. So I don't want to work with that guy ever again.
There was nobody that I disliked working with. Nobody. I know that.
Oh, you're lying. I'm kidding.
You know, that Heenan had some things to say about me years and years ago, but I never had a problem with him. And I would love to sit down with him and, you know, talk it all out. He may not even remember who I am. I'm sure he doesn't actually, but. You know, I there was no one there that I didn't enjoy working with. I had a blast from the crew to the girls over in travel. I mean, I just had a blast the whole time. There was no negative memories from my time there.
You know, one of the other dates that comes up big time, and I was really trying to remember if you were a part of it, was the Halloween Havoc that had Goldberg, DDP as the main event, and at 10:58, the main event starts. What goes through WCW's mind with that? Because then you have to go to Nitro, and oh, crap, the entire main event is now going to air for free on TV? I mean, how volatile is that? I mean, you've been in broadcasting for years. That's got to be one of the dumbest things that could ever happen in any entity, NFL, Major League Baseball, etc.
Well, you know, you've been around the wrestling business for a long time as well. The only thing that you can count on is that you can't count on anything in wrestling. And when you lay out the show, you've got Vince killing himself to write 20 pages to make sure we hit our marks and hit our times, and you know everything is timed out. And then somebody goes long with the promo. You know, they've got 3 minutes, they go 12. You know, that sort of stuff happens and adds time, and there's, you know, when you get on the back end of the show, there's not much you can do.
It almost sounded like you were describing Scott Steiner there, but I'm not going there because he may call in and rip my face off and do something horrible.
If Scott Steiner
wants to go 20 minutes, that's actually okay. There are some guys I don't want to hear talk for 2 minutes, but Scott, I could listen to for 20.
Let Scott Steiner call in. I have a bone to pick with that man.
Oh, I'm sure there's a lot of people that do. One of the many things that has come up over the years was who was drawing the ratings on that show and the pay-per-views. The Cruiserweight group, like Guerrero, Saturn, Malenko, and Cetera, Jericho, nice debut on Dancing with the Stars, Chris, would say that it was them. A lot of people would also go, no, it was the NWO, it was that realism storyline, or was it something in the middle in your mind that was doing it? I mean, because it turned into a while there that it was an event every Monday night. I know at my friends in my house, we would tape every week. We would alternate. We would tape Monday Night Raw and watch Nitro Live, or we would watch Raw Live and then pick Nitro up on the 11 o'clock rerun.
Well, this again goes back to how smart and creative and talented Eric is. Eric's idea was to always have what he always called the umbrella storyline, the overarching storyline that controlled everything underneath it. And, you know, we had the NWO for the longest time. Then we had, you know, the Goldberg streak and the Goldberg push for the longest time. Then we ended up with the Millionaires Club and, you know, the New Blood. And then we ended up with the Magnificent Seven. You wanted to always have that going on. And that's why, because you could always count on in WCW, when we were at our peak, that the NWO was going to be screwing around doing something. You never knew when, but whatever was bubbling underneath that umbrella was the Lucha guys. It was the cruiserweights like Jericho and Dean and Benoit and Eddie. Or it was the character guys like Glacier and Wrath and Mortis. And the Cat and, you know, those kind of people, or it was the A-list talent on top, the names you recognize who may not be able to fly around like Rey Mysterio Jr., but can work a match in the ring and keep you entertained, that you never knew what you were going to get, but you always knew that what you got was going to be good. And that's why it worked. And everybody had a storyline. Everybody had something of a character. There was rarely a time when you would see somebody walk out and just go, oh, not him again. And even if you saw somebody that you weren't that excited about seeing walk the aisle, you knew it was because something was going to happen. I'll give you a perfect example. Like, when, God love him, Mike Enos was in the ring and I think it was Hugh Morris when Scott Hall walked in to start the Outsiders act. So you just never knew what was going to happen. Even when it was guys, you're like, well, this is C-list talent. Why are they in the ring? Oh, here comes Scott Hall. So it you just never knew, and you knew it was always going to be good.
Now, I want to ask this because you're a wrestling fan just like we were. Sure. The story of the night that the NWO was formed in Daytona. The Mike Mooneyham and Sean Cassell wrote a book on the subject of sex and headlocks and all that stuff. And if Hulk Hogan had said no, because I believe originally they, and I may be wrong, I may be right, that Bischoff wanted Sting to become the third person in this New World Order thing. If he had said yes and Hogan had said no, what do you think the NWO would have become? Would it still have become as monstrous as it was, or would it have been something more dark and mysterious?
It would not have been nearly as over as it was. That's an understatement. And again, it's an old school wrestling trick, and I don't know that it would play out now. In fact, I'm sure it wouldn't. But back then, and certainly 20, 30 years ago, the more over you were as a babyface, you're going to be more over than that as a heel when you turn. So Hogan had only been, it had been forever since he was a heel, like 1980, since he was a full-blown heel, and that wasn't on a national stage. So him turning heel was going to be huge, especially when it wasn't really hinted at. There wasn't like he was, you know, having some, you know, arguments with the other baby faces, and they're like, well, what's going on with Hulk? He certainly has seemed to have a different attitude. Like, there was nothing like that. And it was that, just bam, right in the face that it's Hogan when he came out as the third member. That got it over, and I'm glad he said yes. But in all honesty, I had heard that was in the works for several months before it happened. I don't know if it took that long to convince him or if their plan the whole time was to do it when they did it. But it didn't shock me because I had heard the rumors about it for several months.
Yeah, we have a question from our chat room. Jersey Girl wants to know. I wasn't going to ask this, but I'll ask because it's a good question. If World Wrestling Entertainment called today and said we'd like you to be in our Hall of Fame, Would you accept the offer, and who would induct Scott Hudson into the WWE Hall of Fame?
Well, see, I'm glad I listened to Jersey Girl's question, because the minute you said if the WWE called, I was going to say, no, I don't want to go. I'm done. I'm too old. I have a wonderful wife and a darling daughter and a job that keeps me busy, but that, sure, why not? And who would induct me? Oh, my God.
I'm free.
Who?
Me. Hint, hint.
Oh, I thought you said Andre.
I'll do it. Why not? My speech, they'd be throwing crap at me, going like, enough, get to Hudson. We don't want to hear you ramble on about how great
he is. You know who I would have induct me? What would be the biggest honor would be to have Jim and Tony induct me. Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone.
Oh, God, that would be amazing just to see them in the same setup.
Yeah, so they just walked out in a tux and did the induction. Oh my God, I would pop.
Yeah, do we have how many things do we want to do here? I say we try five. This will be we'll all three of us will get involved here. We're gonna pick a few random WCW entrance themes.
Hold on.
The Rockin' will play. What? What? Oh, you want, sir? Oh, you want to play your clip? Go ahead.
I've had questions to ask for like the last 15 minutes, and you just had a conversation.
Sorry. Go ahead. Ask your question. Ask something.
I'm done now. You're way past it. You want to play a game, so we'll play a game.
Yeah, and this isn't a Saw game or anything. Nobody's going to get maniacally tortured here, and the ratings will be better than WCW and then TNA.
I do want to ask one thing real quick. The last, first of all, can we crucify Vince Russo for making David Arquette the champion, first and foremost?
I'm not going to get on that bandwagon. First off, I like David a lot. He was a lot of fun to work with. And, you know, I just don't see that as being that big of a deal. I think we were already on such a perilous, slippery slope at that point that it sounds bad in retrospect. And I know that David didn't want to do it at the time. And probably still doesn't want to do it, if you ask him today. But, you know, they were trying to do something. They were trying to do anything to reverse the trend. And doing things the normal way wasn't working, so they tried to come up with something out of the box. So, you know, it didn't hurt. It didn't help. So.
The last Monday Nitro of WCW, when Shane was there and everybody knew that what was going down, was there more relief or sadness amongst everybody involved?
That's a great question, and the answer is, I think there was more sadness. There was, you know, we all knew it was the last time we were going to see each other. We didn't know, you know, if maybe on the other side, we all, you know, we got to the WWF, but that was still going to be months away. That the best scenario was we weren't going to see each other for several months, and the worst would be we never saw each other again. And so it was more sadness. There was no relief. You know, we wanted a place to work. We wanted, you know, paychecks and that sort of stuff. And like I've said before, you know, I've had my career and all that, so I wasn't in any problem at all. But a lot of those folks, especially the crew guys, that was their livelihood. And, you know, it's tough, especially in a changing, environment like television. Yeah, I've known plenty of guys that was their last job in television. When WCW went under, there were no other jobs to be had in television, so they went and did something else. Talented people were, you know, selling real estate, you know, opening a restaurant, but, you know, because there were just no more jobs in television.
Would you have liked to have seen when WWE bought out WCW for them to kind of keep it as its own entity, like UFC's doing with Strikeforce right now, and maybe have, you know, Nitro on Thursdays or you know, instead of having the brand split as we have it now and had it then, having, you know, Nitro on one night and in WWE on the other, and kind of keep them going on their own separate path.
Well, your analogy of UFC and Strikeforce is dead on. That's what they should have done. They didn't, and the reason why is because Vince McMahon would not, under any circumstances, push talent that he didn't control. And I don't mean control like he wrote the checks. I mean talent that he didn't develop and push and get to that point. What we would have seen, and this is why it wouldn't have worked, what we would have seen out of a WCW brand would be exactly what happened to ECW. And it probably would the same result.
And we all know how wonderful that went.
It sucked. That was some of the worst things I've ever seen.
One last one before we play games and have jolly good fun.
Oh boy.
They did the ECW one night stand. Do you think it's possible to do a one night kind of only WCW homage?
Another great question, but let's think about that. Who do you put on top?
Oh God.
I mean, what do you do? Do you bring in Goldberg and Paige? You know, Goldberg still looks great. I don't know if he can still work. I imagine so. Paige.
Big Show.
Yeah, you've got talent like that crossed over. But remember, Big Show's been in the WWE for 12 years.
It's amazing to think that.
So more than that, 13, 14 years. And so when you think about who was on top in WCW, when we were at the peak, you know, do you do that show? And not only does the talent, would that talent draw, but how old are these guys? It wasn't like we had, you know, we had a lot of young guys, but young was 30 back then, 27, 28, 29, 30. That was 14, 15 years ago. You know, God love Rey Mysterio. I don't know how on earth, and it's because Ray is still a child, but it physically, because he can just it amazes me. But you know, you go find every Lucha guy, go find Psicosis, go find, you know, La Parca, go find all those guys. They can't do that stuff anymore.
God love them.
Eddie and Chris are gone. You know, I don't think Dean can go anymore. It would just be too sad to watch. And you know Vince would do everything he could to bury it. He'd probably have Michael Cole announce it and spend the whole show talking about how old and fat and pitiful and, you know, over the hill and past their prime all of the talent was.
I've got your main event.
Oh,
boy.
God.
Das Wunderkind Alex Wright versus Disco Inferno.
That would be okay.
I was hoping for Mike Tenay versus Tony Schiavone, but a boy can dream.
Disco and Alex might actually be, you know, one of the few matches that could that they could actually put on a good match.
We talked about this on Wrestle Talk Radio after the Victory Road debacle. I don't even want to call it a pay per view. My favorite match of the evening was Ultimate X. If you could take Ultimate X and put it in WCW at that time of the cruiserweights of Jericho, Malenko, Benoit, Saturn, Hoovy, Ray when he wasn't looking like RoboCop, Psicosis, La Parca, you know, the Young Dragons, Three Counts, would that have just like blown everybody out of the water, or would those guys have not known what to do with something like Ultimate X? Would Ultimate X have worked in WCW?
Oh, sure. Those guys that you just went down are total pros. There was no screwing around with that bunch. I mean, God knows they had their demons that, as we've learned, unfortunately, over the ensuing years. But when it came to in the ring, they were trustworthy, and they would all do what they were told, and they would have been, all you would have had to say to Jericho or Chris or Dean or Eddie or Saturn or any of the Lucha guys is, there's a big X hanging over the ring, you gotta get it. work out the match, and they could have put on 45 minutes that would have blown you away, and that's all the booking it would have taken. You're going over, and that's it.
Yeah, I gotta ask about this one match that comes to my mind, because it was played at my house when you were announced as being a groomsman in the wedding, and my wife Misty was sitting there going, okay, cool. I said, oh, I can show you Scott. And she's like, really? Yeah. I was like, cool. Mm-hmm. We pop in the Heat Seekers from the WWE roundtable thing, and it's Nassau Coliseum for the world title. Vince Russo versus Booker T. Was that the worst match that you ever had a call, or was there one that could be even worse to call? Because I think some of the New York Islander players got involved in that match. There was more run-ins in there than anything I can ever imagine. And we're just sitting there going, hey, look, there's Borash next to him, too. Look, there's who's that? Oh, that's Scott right there.
Let me tell you, I will not say this on the show, but at some point when you and I look up again, whenever we see each other, remind me to tell you what happened after the Nassau Coliseum show on the way back to the hotel. That's one of the greatest stories ever. But, and I'm not kidding, and I'm not repeating it. I'm not, I promise, but it's a good story. But as far as the worst match, honestly, there were so many matches, that were, how you say, not entertaining or not good, that it's hard to pick one. I would hesitate to say that any match with Vince in it would be the worst match I recall, because he's not a wrestler and he never claimed to be. So, you know, yeah, was it the worst match bell to bell ever? Yeah, it's probably up there, but it wasn't really a wrestling match. It was just to further a storyline. So, eh. That wasn't good, but he'll probably tell you he wasn't trying to be good. He was trying to entertain and get over a character.
Yeah, you said there's no one you would ever sit next that you never had a problem with, but a lot of people seem to have a problem with Mark Madden doing the wrestling stuff. Was he as big a jerk as everybody makes him out to be?
No, not to me. I had known Mark when he came in, I guess, late 2000 onto the Nitro team. I had known Mark for 10 or 12, 13 years before that, because we both, I don't know, cut our teeth writing for the Wrestling Observer Newsletter and for the Pro Wrestling Torch. We both went back to, longer than that, back to like 1984 when I started doing that. And so, you know, I knew it. And it wasn't a matter of he was abrasive. I knew what he was like. And he came in and he was just funny as hell to me. That was it. You know, when we would have our nitros, it came to the point where we didn't have a locker room. You know, the powers that be, not Vince Russo, but the real powers that be, didn't want to waste locker room space on announcers. So they said, all right, no more announcers in the locker room. We're like, okay, well, what are we going to do? Then we find out that they bring us a motorhome to every show. So we get to stay out literally the I'll be in my trailer type thing. We're in this huge motorhome, and that's where we stay all day. And so we're all hanging out in there. It's me and Tony and Mike, Legend, Tenzer, Madden, and, you know, and Buffer when he's around. And it's just, you know, nonstop. You can crack each other up all day. And Madden was a pro.
Hmm. Okay. It is that time. Sir Rockin has found 4 or 5.
Oh, come up with another question, please. I don't want to do this. I don't want to hear Ricky Steamboat with the Family Man again.
No, we won't go there.
Sir. No, we've got a couple. But I want to ask you, you can judge this first. We have the Animals version from their theme song, and we have My Daughter. Who says I Wanna Rush better?
Okay, here's Spug's daughter.
I wanna rush!
And now here's Joe Laurinaitis from his appearance on OWW Radio.
Maybe.
He's someone.
Wanna rush!
That's Mike Hegstrand. Didn't we get Road Warrior Animals saying, oh, what a rush they're rocking?
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good one. She could have replaced Draws in the in the group. That would have worked.
Yeah, I would just go, I tell you what, go cut her, you know, a reverse mohawk, paint up her face, put her in some pads, and she's in.
There you go.
You
get
what,
some of the pads that WWF made up back in the day, those styrofoam ones.
I work in the Ohio area from time to time. You know, it sounds pitiful to say, but it's fun to do on the weekends. You know, I have no illusions of ever being anything huge. So, you know, we wrestle around a lot, and I throw around powerbomber and stuff. My daughter, I can't figure out how she's either learned it from watching it or learned it from me, but my daughter the other day grabbed me by the arm, judo throwed me, and then put me in Del Rio's armbar.
Nice.
All on the left side, mind you.
Oh,
yes.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, we'll do good. We'll do two songs. We won't torture Scott with more than that.
Okay.
Or you want Sorokin says he has three. So go ahead and play the first one, and we'll see if we can figure this one out. Okay. Does anybody want to guess on that one?
I'm going to go with the dog.
Okay. Spug, you want to give a guess?
Goldberg's first theme.
I want to go with Goldberg or Glacier. I'll go with Goldberg. All right there, Internet God. Who was it? Come on. Bill, that was
Dean Malenko.
Wow, okay.
Wow.
All right, so we suck at this, obviously. We'll try for $200. Mansion. Okay, do you want to pass, Scott, or do you want to give it a shot?
No, I'll just because it sounds like him, I'll say Vampiro.
Okay, so he's going with Vampiro, Vampiro, whichever you want to go with. Spug, do you have a guess?
Vampiro.
Hey, it almost sounds like the Dungeon, Jersey Girl in our chat room. What do you think? You think it's Rey Mysterio?
Actually, okay, I would like to change mine.
Okay, but who do you think then it's not Vampiro? Who do you think it is?
Mortis.
Okay, I want to go with the Dungeon of Doom, but I think I'm wrong. So, Sir Rockin, give us the answer. Who it was? Who is it? Spug is right? Spug is right. Wow. All right. Cool. He's good. Okay, we'll do a third one. And for the last
That's the guy I miss a ton, by the way, is Mortis.
That was such a good gimmick.
Yep. And he was one of my best friends too, and you know, he's gone now, he's got caught up in all that stuff, but he's a great guy.
All right, our third one is Is that from a? Can you give me the hint if that was a Nitro era or is that before Nitro? Can you give us a hint? He's not giving us Jack Crap. Oh, it was during Nitro at one point. Okay, so it is the Nitro era.
Can I get you to play it one more time?
Oh, please. Oh.
No. Because
Scott's like, no, God, no.
Scott's sitting there going, I can watch TNA instead of talking to these schmucks. Okay, Kevin Scott in our chat room says the Public Enemy.
I'm going to go with Bobby Duncombe Jr.
Bobby Duncombe?
What? That's not from the West Texas Rednecks.
That's all I got.
Okay.
Spunk, I love Scott.
Go ahead, Spunk. You want to give a guess, or do we not care at this point? Because these are some bad themes.
I'm going to go with... Oh, Ernest the Cat Miller.
Yeah, I was going to go with Ernest Miller, too. So, Sorokin?
Oh, man!
G.I. Bro? As in Booker five-time champion?
I still win. I went 1-2.
Yeah, Scott and I are sitting both going like, let's go to commercial, Shivani. No.
I had actually forgotten G.I. Bro existed.
Sure, he would wish G.I. Bro did.
I'm sure Booker's encouraging that.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, we have reached the end of our hour with you. We wish we could keep you, but it's in Buff Bagwell's contract that he has the whole next hour to himself.
I have zero problem stepping aside for a man the caliber and talent of Mark Bagwell. I think the world of him, and don't get to see him nearly as much as I used to, but he's one of my all-time favorites. Love that guy. Good fella.
And we'll stay with us during the break, and we'll put you two together for a couple minutes, and then we'll come back on Online World of Wrestling Radio with Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell on Online World of Wrestling Radio, the WCW edition. That'll put some ass in seats.
Where boyhood dreams come true.
Wait a minute! Michael said he got it! He got all of it! Michael's got all of it! Michael, that cover! 5, 2, down!
The boyhood dream has come true for Shawn Michaels!
The night where new eras are born.
Michael's going for another chip! Awesome! He got it! The Steiner! Mike Tyson in!
Torches are passed.
He's holding it up, that's why he is. The greatest professional athlete in the world today. Look at this. He's laughing at the ball. I don't believe it. Oh, dropping the big leg. Over for the cover. He got it. Unbelievable.
What will happen this year at WrestleMania? Find out the night before the granddaddy of them all on WrestleTalk Radio on Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hello, Rock. We haven't been properly introduced. I'm The Miz, the WWE Champion and star of WrestleMania. You, on the other hand, are only the host of WrestleMania. So you should know your role and be the best Ryan Seacrest that you can be.
Only on the Wild Talk Radio Network at wildtalkradio.com.
The definitive professional wrestling-based website on the internet today brings you everything from everywhere. The WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor, the Indie Scene. All this and more can be found on one site. If you're obsessed with everything wrestling, head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. News, views, and information from the world of professional wrestling is right at your fingertips, only a mouse click away, with every single page chock full of information and news on your favorite wrestling stars, such as
Chris Jericho,
Derek Bischoff,
Sid Vicious,
Mick Foley,
plus the most definitive source for all the best audio and video the internet has to offer. As well, news articles and blogs from some of the best-known internet wrestling talent today, and the most in-depth and detailed profiles and galleries of the biggest and brightest stars of today.
Rob Van Dam.
Mr. Kennedy!
Christian Cage.
Brett Berry. Janice Michelle.
Christy Hemme.
Jay Lethal.
Yesterday.
Brett the Hitman Hart.
The Sergeant Slaughter.
Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man.
Paul Hogan. The greatest of all time.
Jimmy Van the Boogie Wiggleman.
And tomorrow.
TJ Wolf and Natty Neidhart.
Harry Smith. Jack Evans.
Get into the world of wrestling online. It's the site the pros use. Online World of Wrestling. www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Check it out today.
Hey, this is World War Animal. If you want the best and the most informative wrestling news, you listen for the Wojak, the Spud, and the Manziazi. This is World War Animal, and I listen. Oh, what a rush.
Barbara Streisand.
I'm both by the stump and the girls. Just
Amy.
Can't get enough.
Amy. Barbara Streisand.
Welcome back to our WCW Tribute Edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio, brought to you by the Wild Talk Radio Network. Our number is always 267-297-1397. If you're a part of the Skype network, you can Skype Sir Rockin' in his two words, and he will get you on the line with a man who is one of the longest tenured members of World Championship Wrestling. When I say that, I'm not kidding. Go back to September 1990, and that's when he signed his first contract with World Championship Wrestling. He is a former Rookie of the Year. He is a former multi-time WCW Tag Team Champion. He's been all around the world and is known as the Stuff. He is Marcus Alexander Buff Bagwell. Thank you for being a part of our show tonight.
Oh man, thanks a lot. That was real sweet and true. So thank you for the intro.
Now, for fans that are aware of it, you are, and I was surprised when I talked to you the first time and you gave me the answer to this. You are a Georgia native. How much of an influence did Georgia Championship Wrestling and the Crockett's have on your life? Was it always, everybody always says when they lived in Georgia, oh, 6:05 Eastern on a Saturday, I totally was watching WCW Saturday night. Was that something that was a part of your growing up?
I came in at, when the Crockett's were selling to Ted. So all that kind of came together at the same time.
Were you a fan of the business? Were you watching the Saturday Night Show as a kid in Georgia, or was it never a part of your
life? I really didn't do. Missy Hyatt moved in next door to me. And I was like, you know, this is like, you know, fate, you know. So I tried and made it, and the rest is history, you know.
You've been a part of the NWO with Scott Norton. You're the American Males, the Magnificent Seven. You were tag team with your mom for a while. You were with the Patriot. You were with Del Wilkes. It seems like a lot of your career has been based around being a tag team wrestler. Is there anything in your career that you'd like to go back and say, hey, I can be a pretty legitimate singles wrestler as well?
No. I really, really, really enjoy tag team. And I'm really good. And it's like, you know, it's just hard 101. But when you've got a tag team, it's much better. So I've always loved tags. Loved them.
Go ahead, sorry.
You're good. We talked with Scott Hudson about working for Global. What was your initial reaction when they brought you into Global and said, okay, we're going to put this mask on this good-looking guy, and we're going to call you the Handsome Stranger?
I mean, oh, my God. I was so embarrassed. But I had to do it. And later on, people started liking it. I was like, are y'all crazy? You know, but they loved it, you know.
Is there any one of your gimmicks going from the American Males to the Handsome Stranger to Fabulous Fabian that you look back on now and go, maybe not such a good idea?
No, I don't. It was really all fate. It was just, you know, first thing was Tate Fabian, and then it went on to finally I found myself, which is Buff.
When you got to the Buff Bagwell, first of all, do you still have any of the hats?
Oh, yeah.
When you got to the Buff Bagwell, because we often hear people talk about how when you get in the ring, you just want your gimmick to be a more amplified version of yourself. You know, be yourself in the ring, but louder.
Right.
When you finally come across Buff Bagwell and you're doing the strut and you've got the hat and the overalls, was there anybody that said, that's not him at all. I know him. He's quiet. He's not like that at all.
No. Actually, Sting, I was in Baltimore, and Sting actually said, I came back and said, whatever you just did, keep doing it. And I just was crazy in this, that walk thing I did, you know, it was like, I didn't know what I was doing. And I watched a tape, see it.
When you originally started in WCW, you came in 1990-91, where there had been a regime change. What were your initial memories of being a part of the company at that point? Because I believe in 91, Ric Flair had already left, and he was in WWE doing his real world champion thing. What was the atmosphere like? Was it a situation of the people looking around going, oh, God, Flair is gone. What are we going to do? Or was there a lot of confidence?
Oh yeah. They thought, spoon in my hand and gay and all that stuff. So I had heat, so I stay still and was real quiet and got over good.
What was the office like at that point? Because someone like Jim Herd comes in. We've heard many stories from people that he came in from working as an executive in Pizza Hut. He had done some TV stuff. Were you too new in the business to realize what was going on, or did you smell the blood in the water from a lot of the other wrestlers?
I smell the blood.
Did you think that the other people in the office, the other wrestlers were going, dear God, this guy's going to bring this company down?
No.
You were part of the NWO later on in your career.
Yes.
In WCW, and you guys essentially ran wrestling. For 88
yes.
weeks, you were wrestling. Everybody watched you.
Yes.
First of all, what was it like to be part of such a success? I mean, that faction, that stable is put up there with
unreal. I mean, really, really unreal, man. I mean, just, you know, heard how people come see us, and it's just unreal. A dream.
You and Hogan and all those, did you guys locker room together, or were you guys kind of like, were Nash?
We always Hogan going to Hogan's. No, we go to Hogan's and get ready, you know, to go out.
When we you look back at that NWO thing, and you being additioned into it, do you think it got too big too fast, and it should have stayed in a small and small situation?
We had to water it down, you know, and that when it all started happening bad, you know. So everybody was, we had too many people, you know.
Because it almost seemed like it, you know, you'd pull up to a, you'd watch the group pull up, and it's like, okay, wait a minute. A few weeks ago, it was just Hogan, Hall, Nash, DiBiase, Six Pac, or X6 when he was there. Next thing you know, it's like, okay, there's guys that are lower on the card than anyone else. You know,
right.
Was it just the rest of the locker room got tired of you guys beating the crap out of them week after week?
Yeah. Yes. We wanted a smaller group.
So that's why the red and black and the white and black was created?
Yes, yes, yes.
Is there any way a group like the NWO could work in today's wrestling, you think?
I think it could, but and wrestling is just harder. You know, it's tough.
We asked Scott Hudson this, and I'd like to ask you to get your opinion. The last Monday Nitro of WCW, Shane's there, you know, everybody knows what's going down. Was there more remorse and sadness or relief amongst the talent in the back?
Oh, everybody's crying, girls are crying, all that, and we didn't know if they had a job or not, so it's bad.
Fair enough.
It was real bad.
You muted your mic, Alan. Unmute, buddy.
I'm muted. I'm muted now. No, sorry, I thought I had the mic. I accidentally muted my microphone. When we
guys, I'm getting ready, I'm tired, man.
That's okay, man. We can go ahead and let you go. We appreciate you being here with us for the few minutes.
No, man, no, I love it. Love it. But, I'm really good being, man.
All right.
We thank you for being with us here.
Yes, yes. And, let's do it again, please.
Alrighty, Marcus Alexander Bagwell joined us on All Our World of Wrestling Radio. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into some WWE and TNA news and notes, and we'll talk to you on the other side of the break, guys. Looking for a place to hang out with fellow pro wrestling fans?
then look no farther than the official forum of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. OWW Genesis. It's the gold standard in wrestling forums. OWW Genesis is the home of over 50, that's right, 50 unique forums that range from current day wrestling news and results in WWE, TNA, ROH, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, tons of indie promotions. As well, there are forums for you to discuss everything from pro wrestling past, including WCCW, WCW, ECW, and the golden age of pro wrestling. You want more? Wow. Then check out OWW Undisputed. It's the official debate league. Or even check out OWW Takedown, which is the official e-fed of OWW Genesis. You still want more? Damn, you're a picky person. OWW Genesis is also the official forum for Chick Fight and Online World of Wrestling Radio. You want more? God, you are a super cool wrestling fan. Then just head over to the gold standard of wrestling forums, OWW Genesis, right now at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
You never know what will happen when you tune in to CB Radio.
Sophia Restaurant, may I help you?
Yes, I'd like to order, please.
What would you like?
Vegetable fried rice.
Huh?
Vegetable fried rice.
Pie. Only vegetable.
Vegetable Hello? Fried rice. Hello?
Yes.
Yes, vegetable
no
fried
meat.
Rice.
And do you, egg is okay? No egg.
Egg okay. Egg okay.
Okay.
No bok choy?
Oh, we don't have bok choy.
No bok choy? Okay.
Yes.
Snow peas? You have snow peas?
Yeah, we have snow peas.
Extra snow peas.
What do you mean? You mean to fried rice?
Yes, fried rice.
Oh, fried rice, we don't have snow peas.
No snow pea?
Yeah.
The chicken? Do you put chicken in there?
Yeah, we have chicken fried rice.
But
you want chicken fried rice?
No, I want the vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Oh, that means chicken fried rice, yeah?
No, vegetable fried rice with the chicken.
Hello, we have seafood fried rice, beef fried rice, chicken fried rice. Or if you don't want meat, we can make a vegetable fried rice for you. So you want chicken or no chicken?
No, I want the vegetables and the chicken. Can you do both?
We have like a fried rice, we have green peas inside. Not too much vegetables.
Never mind. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Tune in to CB Radio Saturdays, midnight Eastern Time, on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
What up, Matt?
Oh, yeah! Ooh, yeah, this is somebody doing a really bad impression of Macho Man Randy Savage telling you to snap in to WrestleTalk Radio right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. Ooh, yeah, dig it!
Welcome back to the Finger Poke of Doom edition of Online World of Wrestling Radio. Alan Wojcik with Spug. Normally we are joined by the Mace. However, the Mace has gone on to future endeavors, and I don't mean that he was fired. He wasn't fired. He went on to greener pastures and found an awesome profession, but I believe leave us a goodbye of some kind, Sorok? Am I hearing this right? Did he type? I thought I got an email from May saying, I have this goodbye. So go ahead and play Mace's goodbye.
Hey, Alan. As you probably know by now, I have actually gained employment, thus I am unable to attend OWW Radio Live anymore. I just want to say thank you for allowing me to come onto the air and talk with the wonderful guests that I have helped interview over the past however long I was here. Bit of a shame that I'm going to miss out on the episode of OWW where the whole night is dedicated to the one place I could have spent hours talking about because I love it so much, that being WCW. But them's the breaks. So with that nice stuff out of the way, I just wanted to say something from one of my heroes. George Carlin. Shit, piss, fuck, cunt, motherfucker, cocksucker, motherfucker, and tits. Don't have a heart attack, Alan. The bosses really don't care that much about the swearing. Take care, guys, and as Arnold says, I'll be back.
I wanted him to say so long and thanks for the fish, but he didn't go there, so... yeah, it is a bummer that we have lost Mace. As I said, he's not gone away. He wasn't traded. He wasn't terminated. He has found a way better job than this, and...
We fired him.
I did not.
We fired him. WTR, the WTR Network, Future Endeavored Mace. You can catch him with what's that guy's name? Brian Bertrand, Maverick?
Yeah, I don't know who he is, but okay.
You can catch them doing Running the Ropes Friday nights, 6 p.m. Eastern, on some network that nobody cares about.
I don't think there's any. I think everybody's network they don't care about except ours, which is pretty cool. Got to figure out, do I want to torture myself with TNA first? Yeah, let's get it out of the way. We already look like we're going to have, we already have two matches announced, believe it or not, for Lockdown, which is April 17th. The Knockouts champion Madison Rain is going to take on Mickey James and her hair. Now, I don't mean her hair is going to wrestle. I mean that if Mickey does not walk out of Cincinnati, the Knockouts champion, we're going to have a bald, hardcore country. Now, Serena Deeb, a previous guest on our show, and Nikki Rocks, another previous guest, they seem to have pulled it off pretty well. But I don't know if I want to see a bald Mickey James. And we heard stories, I don't know if Jersey Girl saying in our chat room that apparently Mickey James is injured. I don't know if it's a leg injury or something. But, you know, they filmed 3 weeks worth of TV this past time when they were here. The other match set up is Sting defending his world championship against, how do I tackle this? We don't frickin' know. Because if you watched this past week's Impact, you saw a no contest match between RVD, Mr. Anderson, AJ Styles, and Bully Ray, Spug. I mean, is Bully Ray, I know he's got 23-time World Tag Team Champion. He's one of the best tag teams ever. But is he credible enough in the singles division to this match?
Move on.
Yeah, I'm just confused. Okay, according to Drew's girl, she's saying Madison missed the move and injured her shoulder, pulled her shoulder out of socket? Uh-huh. Okay. That just visions of somas dancing in my head. I'm sorry, there's a third match for this event. It looks like after the guitar shot All-American style from Kurt Angle on Impact, we're gonna get in a lockdown, which is only four sides, no six. Damn. We're gonna get Kurt Angle versus Jeff Jarrett. I was really hoping I was a TV in that box, and then he was going to hit Jeff with the TV. But alas, it was just a guitar. Madison, bringing up Madison Rain, I have to bring this up because I don't understand it, and I may be writing someone at TNA Wrestling to try to understand it. You had Nikki Rocks come back and lose a match. You had Cheerleader Melissa Flash come back this past Thursday to take on Madison Rain. And instead, the match lasted, I think, longer than it takes to walk from your refrigerator to your chair. So I don't know if this is a way of burying the women's division or what the heck is going on here. We do have a new World Television Champion. Yes, that belt really still exists because it was on the Monster Abyss, who has been taken off TV completely. However, he's supposed to return with a brand new look. Now, I don't know if he met the Queer Eye from the Straight Guy group, or if he's, you know, I mean, I don't know, because I haven't seen it. But Gunner and Murphy is your new TNA TV champion, if the audience does care or not care.
There really wasn't much wrestling on this damn show, and that's what's annoying, because, hey, I tuned in for wrestling. I don't tune in for an opening promo of Sting with a brand new championship, which we talked about during the Tap Outs to Knockouts edition of Ultimate Fighting Championship, which we'll address in a few minutes. The new championship, and you've seen several of them in UFC, Spug, doesn't the TNA belt look a little suspiciously like the UFC belts, or is it just me?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. I mean, isn't that essentially the old TNA belt? I mean, it's the old belt.
I don't know if that's the one that Eric Young is walking around backstage with.
You know what? You know what they need to do? To wash the taste out of everybody's mouth. This whole Jeff Hardy thing. You know what they need to do? They need to have a unification match between Eric Young and Sting.
That would make money. That would be money, because Eric Young would work with Sting. And it would go more than a minute and 28 seconds. And Eric would actually know where to put his t-shirt.
But it would be funny.
It would be funny.
You can't tell me that that match would not be funny.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, Sorokin has found the new TNA World Championship belt for us. Let's turn in our hymnals and whoa! That's what it looks. Wow. Okay, that's just scary. Could you share that with the residents of our chat? Because that's just. Oof.
Oh, and by the way, during the break, I went and looked something up.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
What did you look up?
Getting your Buff Bagwell on means to get hammered.
Ooh, God. Wow. I'm going to let that go, because I'm going to be the politically correct one of the group here. As mentioned, lockdown is April 17th. It is in Cincinnati. Go to TNAWrestling.com if you want to obtain travel packages to that event. And that's all I want to do. I don't want to talk about TNA anymore because, ugh.
For people who are more hip with Twitter than I am, how do I unfollow people?
You can go to the Twitter website probably and do it. It depends what
I'm on Twitter. I'm on the website right now.
Okay. There should be something on there that you can tag in. Oh, you hit the follow button, according to Sorokin, because he is the most tech savvy. Him and Mace are the most tech savvy of all. Except Mace isn't here, so Mace can't help us. Damn it! Mace can't explain the madness that is coming out of a house somewhere in Tennessee that's Russo and Jarrett and Hogan and Bischoff are sitting there going, yeah, that'll be good. We want to watch that. No, you don't. We don't want to watch that, dude. We want to actually watch wrestling. Make sure whatever you do, don't call the WWE Hall of Fame, the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, as a TV, I think it was TVWeek.com or somebody with TV Weekly called it that, and next thing you know, a WWE media relations person.
Oh, God.
On his doorstep, visually doorstep, and next thing you know, he's getting lectured about, it's not that, it's the WWE Hall of Fame, and it's this, and we don't have wrestlers. We have superstars and knockouts. And I was talking to Phil Strom earlier today about it, because he interviewed Michael Cole for the Poughkeepsie Journal and for the Under the Ring blog, which you can get from PoughkeepsieJournal.com. Oh, here it is. TVWeek.com put out a headline mentioning Drew Carey inducted into Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame. Apparently the young lady's name is Kelly Baldiga, apparently demanding that they change the headline and mention that we are no longer a wrestling company, but rather a global entertainment company with a movie studio, international licensing deals, publisher of three magazines, consumer, distributor, and more. Apparently also in there is that we do not do wrestling events. They're entertainments, and we don't call them wrestlers. They're superstars and divas. Huh?
Oh, God. I read that the other day and wanted to punch that lady right in the mouth.
I just want to hit the rewind button on that one. We know that it's sports entertainment, as it's known, because if you follow wrestling, Ted Turner, when he bought WCW, called Vince McMahon and said, hey, yo, Vince, I'm in the wrestling business. And Vince subsequently said to him, that's great, I'm in the sports entertainment business. So it almost comes to a point, I think it was Sean Oliver, one of the U-Shoot DVDs that he had a former WWE star on, that was talking about Kevin Dunn, and it's almost like at some point, you're going to be putting on Nitro, you're going to put on Raw or SmackDown, and you're going to go, where'd the ring go? Oh, that's right, we don't need the ring anymore, because this is sports entertainment. We're going to have them just sitting there like TNT back in the day, and Lord Alfred, the ghost of Lord Alfred Hayes will show up and interview. I mean, as someone who understands, does that bother you to hear an executive in this organization calling it, it's not, we're not wrestlers?
It just proves how retarded she is. It just proves how dumb she is.
Was she possibly sampling some of the locker room beverages?
I don't know, but it really proves how dumb she is. Because I guarantee you that Vince wasn't all up in arms about it. Oh. And I guarantee you that Stephanie wasn't all up in arms about it. And I sure as hell can guarantee you that Triple H wasn't all up in arms about it. This dumb twit is the one who probably saw it and got all up in arms and all a fluster and a Twitter over it. Needs to shut her mouth because you look like a damned idiot.
That's just really weird. We got this other news info before we get into Raw and SmackDown news, that remember, if you're a follower of WWE, there is no SmackDown taping next week, that after Raw in Chicago, everyone is flying to Georgia on Tuesday morning, and it looks like they're going to use the final episode of SmackDown before WrestleMania as a go-home show, that they're going to use footage from Thursday's Access event, plus interviews and video packages designed to push WrestleMania 27, which is definitely weird. But I think Sir Rockin's right. I think that's been the situation, that they've done it for a couple of years, so no big deal. But if you're sitting there somewhere going, dude, I want tickets. Damn, how do I get tickets? I can't. Shoot.
I think they're...
Yeah, and if you're also in the market and you're going, I want to get tickets to Fatal 4-Way, don't be looking on Ticketmaster for Fatal 4-Way, because it's not Fatal 4-Way. For now, the event that's going to take place June 19th at the Verizon Center is now called Capital Punishment.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, it almost sounds like an old WCW pay-per-view of, like, Wrestle War 91, Capital Combat, or something like that. And RoboCop will walk out and go, I am here to save all of you. Yes. I will openly admit, did not get to watch all of SmackDown this week. Yes, I know I'm bad. I have sinned. But thanks to watching WWE program, where we found out that this year's Hall of Fame is going to get bloody.
Abdullah!
Yeah, because the proprietor of Abby's Barbecue and Korean food, or Chinese food, I forget what he's got in that restaurant in Atlanta, Abdullah the Butcher, who never once set foot in a WWE ring, is going into the Hall of Fame. So Bullet Bob Armstrong has never worked for the organization, and Abdullah the Butcher is going in. This seems to be a trend recently, especially like with Gorgeous George going in last year, and like Vern Gagne went in. Vern never had anything to do with it. So I guess they are kind of making it a legit Hall of Fame with talent outside of the company. Obviously, they're all going to pale in comparison to the legend that is Drew Carey, but hey, you know, we all can't be people.
I just have one, I literally have a legitimate question.
Uh-oh.
Is he finally going to break kayfabe when he gets inducted and speak English?
I've heard him speak English. I don't know. Or you mean just on camera with people?
On camera with people. Because yeah,
you
remember,
don't want to hear him talk.
Huh?
You don't want to hear him talk. He has a very high-pitched voice. I was very surprised when I heard him.
Really?
He was on an RF shoot that's been passed around. I think if you go to YouTube, you can find it where they actually had him stick a silver dollar in the indentation in his forehead. All the scar tissue that he's got. And I think he's talking on the footage, and he's got up there. And we have a caller on the line. Hello, welcome to the show. Your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, Alan, it's Jim Varsalone calling. How are you all?
Hey, Jim. Yeah. How are you this evening?
Yes. Sorry about that. Very busy, a lot of stuff going on tonight. But still want to call in to see what you guys are talking about, what was going on.
Yeah, well, right now, we unfortunately had to cut Buff Bagwell short. He claimed that he was overtired from his day. There's debate whether it was other
something
issues.
Something else.
So, yeah, we're not going to go there. We had an hour of fun with Scott Hudson. I know from you being in the business as long as you have, then you did cover WCW at certain points in your career, correct?
Yes.
What was your favorite memory overall of WCW? Can you pinpoint like a couple of them? Like, because for fans that aren't aware of it, Jim Varsalone is a writer out of the Miami Herald. Scott Fishman, who was with us as well a few weeks ago, is a contributor to Jim's column, which you can find on MiamiHerald.com. Obviously, many people always remember the stuff of the 90s, but Miami was one of the initial places that War Games, the Match Beyond, was at. I mean, what are some of your favorite memories?
Well, even two, but right before the transition with Crockett Promotions going to Ted Turner. I mean, this was a big territory, Florida, a championship wrestling from Florida with Gordon Sully, NWA, and then NWA really became WCW. A lot of stuff, you know, the Road Warriors being introduced here, have to work in other places, but really getting a lot of national exposure here. I remember that a Sting getting his big push coming from, I want to say, the Dallas, Texas area with the Von Erich group, and then really making a name for himself when he went NWA/WCW. Those two really stand out for me. Miami has held, a few pay-per-views down here. They had one really bad pay-per-view down here that was in Miami that, oh my gosh, it was just like, everyone ripped it after the fact. And I remember the Nasty Boys were on it. It was just, that was the down point of what I remember. But a lot of memory with WCW was, back then, Ole Anderson, when he was in charge, when he was running things, it was a lot of old school. And then you had Four Horsemen, which was another big thing that they did. I mean, that was very much original and really started the stables on a high level, a big national level. You start seeing more stables pop up. But I would think the Road Warriors, Sting, and the Four Horsemen are things that I remember most about NWA / converting into WCW.
Because didn't they used to run at the Knight Center in Miami?
Yes,
before
they did.
Any of the big buildings around?
I want to say, and I may have my information not 100% accurate, but they did. I think they wanted to say they might have done the first Nitro at the James L. Knight Center. If it wasn't the first one, it was one of the first ones they ever did. And I want to say it was when Lex Luger appeared. That was like he was making his big appearance after being with WWF. And Hogan didn't know if they could trust him, and Sting was saying, yeah, you can trust him, and they did a whole big thing there, and that was all done at the James L. Knight Center, which was, describe the James L. Knight Center. It was a smaller venue, maybe about 5,000, more set up like a theater, and it was, it was okay. It was serviceable for what they did, but it wasn't anything like the big arenas that they ended up playing as they evolved.
Yeah, I remember that being a part of, I think it was one of the Clash of Champions that they, early in the WCW era, then I think it was Luger had left the Horsemen and pulled up in a limo, and next thing you know, the Horsemen are jumping him, and I'm like, oh God. And for fans who don't remember, there were actually were supercard events that WCW/NWA held that were maybe four times a year, five times a year, that were called Clash of the Champions, that unfortunately, when Eric Bischoff took power, he phased all of those out. I mean, but for fans unaware of it, I mean, there was a lot of the Championship Wrestling from Florida group of the early 80s that turned into the mid 80s, like Luger, like the new breed of Sean Royal and Chris Champion came out of here. Barry Windham was out of here.
I think Ron Simmons, too.
Yeah, Ron Simmons was trained down here at Hiramatsuda. And so you could go almost any weekend over in that area and see. You know, do you remember fans that WCW, before it went national, they were basically from Florida to possibly, I think, Philadelphia, maybe was as far as they went north?
They started to go in the WWF territory, which, you know, they all started. You mentioned Clash of Champions. That was done. I can't remember what pay-per-view it went up against, but that was done to combat a WWF pay-per-view.
WrestleMania 4.
Was that what it was? Because they were giving fans a free show because Clash of Champions was on cable, but it wasn't paid, where WWF was doing a pay-per-view. So their thought was, hey, let's you know, knock into them because they're starting to pick up so much here that let's try to do something to combat that. Let's have a free show. Let's do something. Oh, we'll do Clash of Champions. And they start having all the titles defend it and all. But Miami has always been a big area for Florida wrestling. The Jackie Gleason, the Miami Beach Convention Center, that's always been a big place. And when WrestleMania comes down next year,
which you broke, you're the man who broke all that everybody.
Well, when that comes down, though, they're going to use the convention center, I want to say, for access. But that's nice. I wish they would have had the convention center for the Hall of Fame ceremony. Not as big as American Airlines Arena, where the Miami Heat plays. You can fit 20,000 in that one. The Jackie Gleason, the convention center is smaller than that. So I could see why they're trying to have it at the AAA rather than there. But as far as the history goes, and you figure you're going to have some legends there, it would have been nice to have that there. But at least they're having fan access there. But with WCW, though, it's interesting to see a lot of the Florida stars, Mid-Atlantic area. You know, that was Crockett, that all became WCW. It was really the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, Alabama, Tennessee. They really went into Philly just to try to stick it to WWF and try to, you know, go into their territory a little bit and try to make some headways there. But really that WCW that was an offshoot of the Southeast was really their territory, so to speak, when it became like that. And then, you know, they had Dallas because with the Von Erichs, that became WCW territory as well. And then it just, you know, broke off from there. So,
yeah. When you look back at that era, Ric Flair said it, I believe, on the Rise and Fall of WCW DVD, and it's a little hard to fathom him saying it, but he said that if Jim Crockett hadn't expanded out, I think the exact phrasing he used was, if they had stuck between Chicago and Baltimore, they'd still be in business today. Is that just wishful thinking, or the Crockett's would have had to expand to keep?
No, it had to. If they wanted to look, they wanted to compete with the big boys, and the only big boy really left it became WWF, WWE, and Vince McMahon. So, I mean, look at it out there. I mean, you have WWF right now, you have TNA, which is trying, but they're still nowhere near what WWF is, WWE. Look at if Jim Crockett Promotions didn't try to do that, what would happen to them? I don't see how they could have survived given the landscape now. Well, if that's the case, then why doesn't somebody come in and just do Baltimore and Charlotte, North Carolina, and some of the cities and do that? No one's been able to do that. They had to give it a shot. It didn't work. They sold it to Turner. He tried it. It was successful. It's just they were paying too many of those guaranteed contracts, and there was too much bickering behind the scenes with some people that they brought in, Turner execs that they brought in, that didn't fit well with the wrestler types and the organization and it just was something there. But I think, no, I think that Crockett had to try because look what happened to the other territories. AWA tried, they went under. World Clash tried with AWA to do those super shows in Memphis, and look what happened to all of them. So, I mean, Crockett, I believe, had to try. It didn't work. Turner tried, had it going for a while, but then that fell apart. So the landscape, it all was because of the Vince McMahon, what he did, and with the Briscoes selling their big share of the NWA territory to Vince McMahon to have a lot of power. It's been documented in a lot of the books. That was a key player as far as they were key players as far as starting the demise of the territories. When the Briscoes did that with the NWA and made a lot of money on that, and you know what, good businessmen, good for them. No, I hold no ill feelings, nor should I, or have any reason to. But if you're hardcore and you love territories, those two made a shrewd business move that anybody in a business situation, whether you agree or disagree, don't like or do like, made a right, good business decision, and they made a lot of money off that. And eventually, you know, that started the fall of, that did start the fall of all the territories. And you had the big two survived, and then it became the big one, and then there you go. That's it. That's all you have.
Jim Barcelona, the Miami Herald, joining us here on All I Will of Wrestling Radio. We have an interactive chat going on wildtalkradio.com, and one of the folks had mentioned that there was nothing like late 80s, early 90s WCW as an alternative to the WWF, and I'm of the proper age. I was in high school at that time, so I was able to see the old WCW Saturday night show, 6:05 Eastern, which even to this day you'll run into some people and do that. But it is true, for as much as you had in the late 80s, early 90s, you had Hogan and all that stuff. You know, I can remember sitting in my living room watching Clash of the Champions 6 from Louisiana. I said, I'm not going to watch the WrestleMania 5 and the Mega Powers exploding. I want to watch Ric Flair versus Ricky Steamboat go 55 minutes in a 2 out of 3 falls match that, oh, unfortunately, that may not ever, you know, see the light of day, unfortunately. Does it bother you that WWE puts out a couple of these DVDs and paints, they almost paint WCW as a secondary product, and at one point they kick their ass for 88 weeks in the ratings?
It's the way business is. I mean, you look at the situation with, if the shoe was on the other foot, I think you'd see the same thing. If it was WCW and WWE was the one that fell, you would see WCW doing that. It's just, it doesn't bother me. It's, you know, it's business. And, you know, I think the thing that does, it's not so much bother me, but I think about is the business has changed so much that you're not going to see those 50, 60 minute matches that you mentioned. I mean, you mentioned the classics, Flair and Steamboat. I mean, that was a classic everywhere. Remember at the Hall of Fame speech, Ric Flair said, and there were plenty more classics that only people that went to house shows saw, and some of those were better than the ones on the pay-per-view or on TV. The thing that we don't get anymore is because, and you know, it mirrors, like anything, it mirrors society. We want our news quick. We want our information off our phones. We want to read the headlines in the first paragraph, and we want everything right away. Quick, short. Oh, yeah, I like that, don't like that, let's move on to the next thing. Same thing with the wrestling. Everything is short matches, quick, let's go, next one. I think it mirrors a lot of that today. And that's just the way, you know, for better or worse, that's just the way it is, and that's what the fans today are programmed. Look, I'm telling you, 20 years from now, the fans of today will be complaining because of the way the state of the business is then. You know, if you go back 20 years, you can go back to people back then complaining about the way the business was when we watched it, compared to what they watched 20 years prior to that, the way it is. And that's not just wrestling. That's in a lot of things that happen. So,
hey, Jim, what's up? It's Spud Guy.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. First of all, I can't wait to watch Boston kick the crap out of Miami in the playoffs.
Oh, Lord. News going there.
Well, if he's going to go there, yeah, get your Boston shirt and hat on because you sure can't put the Cleveland stuff on.
Dude, I haven't worn Cleveland gear all this season long.
And you know what? That's your owner. I still say, and I still go back to that. You can you can bash LeBron all you want. You have your right to, but you better be bashing your owner too, because it's your owner's fault that he's not there. And look what they did. And then they got rid of Mo Williams. If we're going to start basketball, what was that all about?
I'm not a Cavaliers fan, my friend.
All right, brother. All
right. He just lives in Ohio. He's more.
Live by Cleveland. I'm not a Cavs fan.
Yeah, he was in heaven.
So many, well, the thing is, there's so many. Again, I know we're wrestling, but there's so many Cavs fans, and you know, quick to bash LeBron. And I can understand if Dwayne Wade left here, we'd be mad at him. We're down in Miami, and also we'd be mad. But at the same token, we'd be mad at Mickey Arison and Pat Riley and those folks. And it was like everybody in Cleveland was like standing ovation for the owner, and you know, and I'm like, are you people kidding me? You know, bash LeBron, fine. But why don't you bash your owner too? Because it's his fault that a whole mess happened. He couldn't keep LeBron. He couldn't get players in there to help LeBron. And, you know, throw Mo Williams in there, please.
There's a lot about that story that nobody knows. You know what I mean? I mean, I think there's more to it than anybody will ever find out. Because
that's always, you know, you can go in anything, and you're right. There's always behind-the-scenes stuff that we'll never know and all.
It'll be an ESPN 30 for 30 doc.
Yeah, right. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The decision directed by Spike Lee. Like that.
Jim Gray, right? Then I'll Jim Gray on. Well,
but no, you were talking about you know, wrestling fans complaining about the pace of matches and whatnot, and how 20 years from now,
school fans, not today's. Obviously, today's fans are programmed for what they're watching today. So,
unfortunately,
is there a point? Can you see the wrestling industry reaching a point in the next either few years or maybe 15 or so down the road where it needs to either reinvent itself entirely or get back to its roots? Can this globalization and, you know, and making it into, you know, the television spectacle that it is every week continue without some sort of ramifications coming from the, you know, SAG or someone else getting involved?
But that's obviously who, you know, what, you know, could obviously anything can happen. We don't know what's going to happen. We can predict, but we don't know. We're not fortune tellers. But I'll say this: if you look at the evolution of the wrestling business, it's. To me, even going way back when, the early days and all, it's evolved for better or worse, but it's evolved different. You don't see it going backwards, you know, backwards for good, backwards for better. It's, you know, what I remember is the, you know, hard school, hard punches, hard kicks, you know, the early 70s, I mean, probably before the 70s, but the early 70s. Then going into a little more music and flash and talk, then to your cartoon, Hulkamania, the whole cartoon era and all. Then we're going into the Attitude era, and we're going into the NWO and Stables, Four Horsemen, and now we're to the PG, you know, John Cena, that whole, you know, you can't see me, entertainment, movies, books, wrestling, all that kind of thing, where sports entertainment. You know, will it go back to one of those? It hasn't yet. You know what I mean? It's always been something different.
I guess what I'm saying, like, things can only grow so far before they have to stop.
Then they'll die off. I mean, that's what I think. And then it would be, a thing where after that would happen, and maybe somebody comes in and says and puts a product out there similar to something in the past and try to do something like that. But remember, too, people have tried hardcore, and it was working for a little while, ECW, the real ECW, but it couldn't survive. It just couldn't survive here, and others have started. Lucha Libre USA, I know it's not a big promotion, but they tried.
Oh, we're fans of it.
Yeah, you like it, huh? I haven't seen it, but I've talked to some of the combatants and all. But yeah. Again, it's not, you know, it takes time. Or MTV, I'm not saying whether it was good or bad. I like it. I disliked it. I did see some of those shows. Remember, they were trying a lucha type show, and it was a basement show.
Yeah,
and
they
had, you know,
Society X.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wrestling Society X and MTV. So there were things out there they tried. The ECW was more hardcore, harder, more of a Japan hardcore with more, you know, more blood, more just going at it, all out, and different things. So they're having different things, different types of things taken from the past that they, but none of them have really worked. Nothing has really worked. Could it work? Yeah, I guess. You got the right person, you get the right crowd, and try to get people into it, then there you go. I mean, look at the ratings for WWE when Rock came back. I mean, it was a big bump. It was a big bump. I mean, you say, well, 0.5, a 0.8. No, no, no. That's pretty good, especially with how the ratings have gone. I mean, the past however many years and all. So when you see that, you're saying, oh, look, see, here's some of the fans they lost. They're getting, not all of them, but they're getting a bunch of them back because Rock was on or Stone Cold was on. You know, I find it interesting that WWF is going that route with Trish Stratus. I mean, brought these people back trying to get some of the older fans back to mix with the newer fans. Are they changing the product? Not really, but, you know, Rock still is Rock. He's not changing his the way he talks and what he says. They bleep him out when they can on live TV. But you know, it's not going to be a total change. But, you know, they try to bring some blast from the past. Didn't they do one night they did old school night or something on WWF and all?
Yeah.
They try to do something. But really, I think if you're talking overall, you know, someone's got to take it, someone's got to do it, and it's got to work, and it's got to get a lot of people interested and a lot of people watching, and it's just not happening right now. You could see that by other things that have tried to start.
Well, speaking of ratings and getting people to do things, how long is it till we're digging the 6-foot hole for TNA?
Ooh, I got a shovel.
Here's the thing, though. Spike TV is happy. And you know why Spike TV is happy? Because if you look across the board at all the shows on Spike TV and what their ratings are, TNA is one of the highest. So that 1.2, wow. You're like, gee, it's only a 1 and 1.2, big deal. Well, for some of those channels, a 1 and a 1.2 is a big deal, and that's why some of these shows stay on those channels, because the problem is, here's the big problem. Is it TNA? No. Here's the big problem. The big problem is you got 50 million channels on the TV now. You got 50 million ways you could watch TV. You could TiVo stuff and watch them later. You could watch 4 different shows at one time, or you could watch one show 2 weeks later. You know, it's messing up all the ratings. It's giving you 50 million things that you can watch. How can you watch 50 million things? You can't. There's more choices for you to watch things. So now, if you get a 1 or 1.5 rating, hooray, hurrah, look what we did. So they're happy. And then with TNA, she's got Panda Energy, which is mom and dad's company, family business. That's a lot of money. You're saying, well, how long are they going to lose money? Well, let me tell you something. Panda Energy, that doesn't even scratch the surface of the money that Panda pays to run TNA. You know what? If they don't make money in TNA, guess what Panda does? 2 words, tax write-off. Thank you very much. So that's a win-win situation for Panda. So TNA is going to be around for a while. It's going to be around for a while.
Yeah. You mentioned the old Bruce Springsteen song, 57 channels and nothing on. If ROH had the backing of a Dixie Carter, if it had the Vince McMahon money, would they be in the situation they were in, losing their HDNet TV and having these DVDs? I mean, I know the DVD
market. No, TNA, no. I can't speak WWE, but TNA, no. If that was our Ring of Honor, be the same thing as TNA right now. They would be in the same position right now. They'd be on TV. They would be, whether it be probably with Spike. I mean, it would be the same type of situation. No, because remember, you'd have Panda Energy backing it. Even though it's a little different product, if Dixie Carter was there, you figure, look, Jeff Jarrett was the one that brought her in. If Jeff Jarrett was involved, well, no, he wouldn't because he was TNA. You figure, no, I really think that if she was involved with Ring of Honor, you know, that's what, look, if it wasn't for Dixie Carter and Panda, TNA would have went under because what was it
exactly.
At the time? Remember? I can't remember.
Yeah, Hell South and Richard Scrutchy was the ones that were funding them because I was living in Nashville at the time.
And then they were going to, and everything was going okay, and then all of a sudden it was like, nope, we can't do this anymore. And they were like, uh-oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Dixie Carter was working with them and working, I want to say publicity, but whatever.
She did. She has a company, Trifecta Entertainment, was their media source.
Oh, so she was doing that, and then it was like, so now she goes to her family business and says, hey, I think this could work. let's, can we put money in this? And then it was one of those, you know, it was either this or that would have been it, sink or swim. And then, Panda was like, yep, we're going to do this. And that saved the company. So if Dixie Carter was Ring of Honor, you got to figure the same thing would have happened. Ring of Honor was like, hey, what can we do? What can we do? She, see, that's the thing about Dixie Carter. Again, I always say this with different people, but whether you like the person or not, you can't take away. She's got a marketing PR background, successful marketing PR background. So she knows how to go talk to the TV executives when you're trying to swoon them, wine and dine them to get them to show your product on the TV. You know, you just think that someone's going to have a wrestling product, go to a TV channel and say, hey, I got a wrestling show. Hey, come on, let's put us on. No. It takes a lot more than that. You'd be surprised still to this day how having Hulk Hogan part of your group, because the mainstream knows Hulk Hogan. You remember now, these executives, if they're in their 30s and 40s and 50s, which a lot of them are, the higher executives, the vice presidents, the presidents of these companies and all, who are they going to remember? Well, they're going to remember Hulk Hogan because that was during their heyday, so to speak, when they were younger. So they're still going to put the name recognition. Hey, we've got Hulk Hogan involved in our program. Oh, really? You know, it's 10 years from now, it'll be somebody else that was big, you know, back then or a little later, you know what I mean? Something like that. So I think that if wherever Dixie Carter would have went, the same thing would have happened. She would have been able to get a TV deal, possibly with Spike, and Ring of Honor would have been on Spike TV and then see what happens and all.
Yeah, 'cause I remember sitting in the Impact Zone when they had their Fox Sports Net show that all of a sudden it was gone. And I'm like, so where's this show being seen, Dixie? Oh, we're on TNAWrestling.com right now. And I'm like, we're what? And I meant the company crawl, and we've said this with Mace here on the show, we've said it with other people, that we don't like bashing this company. And when we had Scott Fishman on, we brought it up a little bit too, Kevin Scott, one of our contributors as well. It's just weird to think that at one point, when, go back to even 06, when you had Kurt Angle, Samoa Joe as one of your pay-per-view main events, they're so far in the distance from that now. So, you know, we're sitting there praising that you brought in Angelina, and WWE's going, really? We've got Snooki! I mean, what was your reaction when you saw something like that? Do you think TNA was sitting there going, aw, crap?
I don't know with that. I mean, they brought her in for, get some of this. Snooki's one of the most, the highest paid reality TV star out there. So this was obviously WWE's way of getting that mainstream publicity that it loves. It still covets the mainstream publicity. Drew Carey. Why are they inducting Drew Carey? Oh, well, he did so much with our Royal Rumble and he has been a fan, but you know, listen, they got Drew Carey because they know the mainstream Access Hollywood, Entertainment Tonight, all these mainstream type programs are going to be showing Drew Carey. They're going to be showing Snooki. That's the only reason. They didn't do it for us. They didn't do it for the WWE Universe, for the old school fans. No. This is all just about the mainstream publicity. So, you know, let's get through it. Let's hope the match isn't long that she's in. And you know, we could take a break. We can go get some snacks and stuff if that's the case and all. But that's every year it's like that with them, with bringing Snoop Dogg in or whoever they're going to bring in like that. That's the reason behind all that. TNA, I don't know if they, you know, it was funny though that, you know, they went after reality. But then you notice that WWE took the biggest one, Snooki, and TNA got JWoww and was it Angelia? Is the other
one of them?
Yeah, whatever. So maybe they got the, but see how TNA. I guess that was funny because TNA got like the mid tier stars, and WWE gets the top star. Which either way, I could care less about all three of them. But it's the way that it evolved with. Yeah, I thought it was funny too. What I thought was funny more than that was when I was reading reports that, oh, Sting might be going to WWE, and oh, that promo they're showing with the rain and the bottom, the shoes with the trench coat, And, it could be Sting. It could be Sting. Maybe he's going to go in the Hall of Fame, and he's the one. And then it wasn't Sting. It was Undertaker.
You've been listening to the archive of our show, because that's all we're there going is, going, please let it be Sting. Don't bad place. And he did, and now he's a champ. Why?
But then you saw what TNA did. So they did the copycat of that promo and then did their own date on it. And obviously, who was it for? It was for Sting. So they were like, why are they copying WWE? That's terrible. And that's not, I thought it was hysterical because everyone, a lot of thought it was going to be Sting and Sting's May, and they did the same type of promo. And I was just like, that was good. That was good. So, but anyway, it's interesting that Sting is really the only guy, right? He's the only guy. Main guy, right, from the WCW days that never crossed over, never crossed into WWF territory.
Pretty much. I can't think of anybody else that may have done it.
Right, any of the big names. I think Sting would have been the only one.
I think he is it.
Do you think he'll ever be WWE Hall of Fame?
I was hoping. I was really hoping this would have been it. Because when you heard Atlanta, all of us from at least... So from January, we were all sitting here on this show and on Russell Talk Radio. We were sitting there going, okay, cool. So that means Arn Anderson's going in. There were stories of Lex Luger possibly. Someone brought up Goldberg, which of course set off Shawn Michaels and Triple H's thing. But are you surprised that there aren't that many former WCW? I mean, the roster is this, for fans that aren't aware of it, going to the Hall of Fame right now. It's Abdullah the Butcher, Drew Carey, Sonny, Bullet Bob Armstrong, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Shawn Michaels, possibly the Road Warriors. We never got to ask Joel Arenitis when he was here, but we didn't want to, so we didn't want to push that button going, yeah, so you're in. They're like, I can't talk about it. is there someone, I mean, we ask this of everyone that's here, so we'll get your opinion, and if we've asked it, I apologize. If you could name two or three that are like the biggest blemishes in Jim Barcelone's mind that should be in this Hall of Fame, if you're going to make it a legit wrestling Hall of Fame, and as we found out from that WWE press thing, you can't call it the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, who goes in if Jim Barcelone has got the pencil and says, this is my ballot, you're in.
Yeah, man, I've done this, so I'm gonna say obviously Bruno Sammartino, but that's not WWE's thing because they have offered and his hatred, disdain toward Vince McMahon, that he's turned it down a couple of times, so that's not happening. He would obviously be number one. I'll tell you who my number two would be, though, is the Russian Bear Ivan Koloff. I really like Koloff. I think in his time, and he's former WWF champion, stopping Sammartino's streak, and he's done so much, I mean, everywhere. If you go through his career, singles and tag team, and it's done a lot with helping, like a Nikita Koloff.
Yeah, I was just about to bring up Uncle Ivan.
So that's been one that's right up there with me, like number two. You know, Sammartino, though, Koloff would be my number one because I know Sammartino's not going to get in. And then after Koloff, there are a few, I don't know what order I put him in, but like Bob Backlund at one, sometime I have to see him get in. I like Ken Patera. I don't know if everyone remembers him, the original World's Strongest Man.
Oh, yeah.
Like Patera. Road Warriors, you mentioned. The Freebirds is a team that I like a lot. Some of the managers play. See, I thought Playboy Gary Hart was going to get in when they were in Houston. I thought Gary Hart might get in, but he didn't. Manager. I really like Gary Hart a lot. And, those
are
the ones.
Sam Mushnick in, because he was a legend with the NWA.
But they
acknowledge the NWA, which WCWF doesn't seem to want to do.
That's the thing, they got Vern Gagne's in there, so I would say yes to your question because Vern is in, and but whether or not they do it because of that, I don't know. I like Mil Máscaras too, and Mil Máscaras, for those that don't know, Man of a Thousand Masks, very high flying skilled wrestler for years. I think he might even still do independent shows like Abdullah the Butcher still does every once in a while. And all, but that's another one that comes to mind. But yeah, the promoters, that's interesting. Like, Sam, you mentioned Paul Bosch, some of those types. But again, I don't know if they're ever going to go that route, but no offense, but like, you see some of like the guard, like Hacksaw Jim Duggan, great guy, made a lot of fans happy and all, and that's great. And Coco Beware, some of the guys. But, you know, there's some guys that I think that do deserve to be in before some of those get in, you know. But it's WWE's Hall of Fame. So, you know, that's just the way it goes with it and all. And, you know, and also, too, look, it's become a business, as everything does, and they're trying to sell tickets, and they want people to watch again. So their big name is Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels, and he's just going to be the main draw for the WWE Universe and the wrestling fans. And then for the mainstream, it's going to be Drew Carey trying to get them interested in the show and other people to watch because he's on. And at the end, that's the way the that's the way it has gone. I could think of several. Kamala, Ron Simmons, those are two others that I've thought about, you know, getting in there. Macho Man, of course, that's another one. I don't know.
Do you put Macho Man and Elizabeth together, or do you just
Randy? No, Macho Man, Elizabeth, but again, that one is Vince McMahon is not a big fan of the Macho Man, and I don't know if that's going to happen, and you know, so many great teams out there. Midnight Express, the Rock and Roll Express. Of course, you mentioned the Road Warriors. Definitely. And Trendsetters.
And can we bring up Rick Rude?
Rick Rude, another one that was lost to us too early and all. But what a great performer! See, that was the thing. You know what? Hulkamania for his as good as it was and as big as it was, and just helping the industry at that time and all. Given a lot of people jobs, given just a lot of things going on. But, you know, some people like Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, Paul Orndorff, never won that world title because of the Hulkamania era. Now, if we had someone else that wasn't as big, maybe Paul Orndorff would have been a champ, a world champ, and Kurt Hennig would have been he was an AWA champ, but they would have been WWF champions and all. So, and it matters to these guys. It does. You know, they always say, hey, I just want a spot. I just want to be on TV. I want to make good money. And they do. Of course they do. Have families to feed. But it does mean a lot for them still to this day to win the world title. Some of the other titles, I don't know. U.S. title, intercontinental title, I mean, tag titles even. This doesn't seem like it's, you know, such a big deal anymore. But still, the big titles still are, so.
Jim Ursula, the Miami Herald, joining us here on All I World of Wrestling Radio. Alan Wojcik and Spugs are rocking us behind the board. If you do want to call in and ask Jim a question, he's got tons of wrestling knowledge. It's 267-297-1397. You can also Skype Sir Rockin. I'm apologizing there. The big thing with Monday Night Raw now, it seems like every week you turn around, okay, look, it's The Rock. Look, it's Steve Austin and Trish Stratus. It's Booker T. It's JBL. But the big question is, the clock strikes midnight, and now we're at Monday Night Raw on April 4th, and now we're moving forward. Rock and Austin sticking around in your mind, or is... Because the money has got to be a match of Rock versus Cena. And we've asked other people on this one, so I wanted to get your take on it. Do you book Rock Cena at some point, or is Rock Cena a match that you can milk to Mania in Miami next year when you possibly put Dwayne Johnson in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Too much time. There's too much time. I would like that because, obviously, Rock, University of Miami, grad, football player, graduated down here. It's his home. He still has a home here in South Florida as well as in California. And he still has family living down here as well. So it would be great to have that. Even if they don't have the match, have him in the Hall of Fame down here. But it would be even better if they could somehow. But that's it. I mean, with the WWE Universe, gee, that's a long time to try to milk something till next year. We still haven't had WrestleMania 27, and we're going to try to milk it for WrestleMania 28. I think that would be the perfect scenario. I think if they would have done what they're doing now next year and didn't do it for WrestleMania 27, would have been better, just because you could have the match next year and you wouldn't have as much time in between if that's their plan. If there's their plan to have Cena Rock at WrestleMania 28. But the thing with Rock, though, is, and I know this, first, when he says he's not leaving again, he's going to be with everybody, it's not that he's going to be on TV all the time and at events, but that's why they made such a big deal that opening night about Facebook and Twitter. sign up for The Rock. He's always going to be The Rock, and he's going to be on WWE.com, Facebook, and you could get him through Twitter and things like that. That's how The Rock is staying forever with the WWE universe, with the old fans and the new fans. That's what he meant by that, and obviously I think some people took it the wrong way because it really wasn't explained either. So, you know, that oh, The Rock's going to be on TV a lot, and he's going to be at this event and this show and that show, and that, no, that's still not the case because he's still a movie star and he's still making a lot of movies, and you can't, when you're doing a movie, you can't just get away from the set and fly to this place and go, you know, sometimes they're shooting their movie scenes at 9 o'clock at night, 2 in the morning, 6 in the morning, you know, anything, you know, noon, it changes day to day, you're working with directors and you got to do 50 million takes. And also, it's not, all right, you know what, I'm taking Monday off. We're not shooting this day. No, it's not up to you. It's not up to you. You're the star, but it's not up to you. Now, that's with the movie director and the producers and the execs there and all. So he's still doing a lot of movies. So the thing is, he doesn't have time to be there every week, but he does have time to do his email, his Facebook, his Twitter, and things like that, and keep in touch with the WWE universe. And we'll see him occasionally. That's how I know this is going to shake out. We'll see him occasionally when he can, or maybe when they're in California, if he's there in Hollywood or wherever he might be shooting a movie. And then maybe he shows up at that time, or he does satellite feeds, like he's been doing a couple of those, so he could still stay in touch. But I don't know, man. Can they milk it for a whole year? I mean, they could, but I'm saying, you know, can it hold water for the year till they get to WrestleMania 28 and they have those two meet? Because that is a big match that everybody wants to see.
Yeah, because I brought it up with Scott Hudson when I was doing a pre-production thing with him, and I brought up the WCW model of go back to September 1996, the War Games match with the fake Sting and the real Sting. Sting walks out of that match and doesn't get in the ring again until December of 97 when you had Hogan versus him. So that's kind of where I was going with that analogy, because I always want to ask Eric Bischoff or someone in power back then, Kevin Sullivan would be another one to think of, could you ever pull something like that off now? As you mentioned, at one point, I think we had 3 weeks between the Royal Rumble and the next pay-per-view. It almost seems like you blink and it's like, oh crap, I just missed half of the WWE calendar.
It was funny because Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant was building up to be the big main event for the AWA back in the day. And the AWA kept putting it off for whatever reason, and then all of a sudden what happens? Hogan goes to the WWF, and they never really got to do their Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant main event, which was supposed to be Vern Gagne and the AWA putting that show together, because they were building up to something like that, and then all of a sudden Andre eventually came over, and then what did you have? WrestleMania 3 with the two of them, and it was all the records and everything that happened and all, so it's interesting, you know, usually nowadays it seems when you got something, don't wait, get it going now, strike the fire when it's hot and get moving with it. Cause you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know injury. You don't know if they're going to leave the company. You know, if fans think of them differently and they don't start, supporting them, hating them or liking them, but either way. We'll see what happens, how all this shakes out. You know, does Rock get involved in the main event in some way as far as competing? You know, I would think they would promote that because they'd want people to buy it, but still he's going to be there. So, you know, you don't know what they're going to end up doing. I just think I personally would like to see it happen down here in Miami, but realistically, can they hold it that long? It's just this day and age, I don't know. You know, I know this, there really is no other place to do that match because Rock isn't going to TNA and Cena's not for that matter either. So it's not like someone could take them away and have that match somewhere else. So that's different from back in the day.
You had brought up Mil Máscaras a few moments ago, and Spug was the one that found this out for us. Share with Jim this story, because it just blew my mind because everybody's crapping on, no, Edge versus Del Rio, and Del Rio's not ready, and Spug found this, and for fans that haven't listened to our show in the past, pontificate on the greatness that you found out about Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, who his family is?
Yes. For fans that don't know, it's amazing.
His dad is, oh my god, I'm looking up an article, I'm trying to research, I'm listening to all this wonderful commentary by Jim Barcelone. And that's why I'm really not talking, because I like to listen and learn.
He's all for story time with Spug.
I am for story time, but, I was researching for tomorrow's interview with HBK. I'm sorry.
Yep, Shawn Michaels tomorrow night will be heard on the Wild Talk Radio Network, which is pretty cool.
That'll be great.
We found out that Mil Máscaras
is his uncle
to Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah. Mil Máscaras is his uncle, and then his dad is also a very famous Mexican wrestler, and Del Rio went by this gimmick at one time.
Dos Caras.
That's it.
Yeah.
Remember Psychedelico? He was briefly in WCW, because I want to say he's related to Del Rio as well. I knew that Dos Caras. I didn't know that about Mil Máscaras. That's interesting you guys said that. I had no idea that there was a relationship there, that he was the nephew of Mil Máscaras as well. Wow. That's something, because you know the history with Dos Caras, Mil Máscaras, even Psychedelico, that it was, those are three big names in the circuit. Alberto Del Rio, that's right. You guys said it. The history and his experience. This isn't a Johnny come lately or even a newcomer. You know, he's at his prime right now. And, people will say he's not ready just because they don't know him or they're not used to him. I mean, he came on the scene. He was hitting his marks right away. You could tell this was a polished ring veteran. I mean, those that say he's not ready for this, I don't know. I think he is ready. I think he's more than ready for this and all. And we'll do a great job, whether in the match, no matter who wins or loses that match and all. So that's surprising to me that you have some people, you know, if it's fans, that's one thing, that's their opinion, and the fans are fans, but the people that are that follow the wrestling and talk with the wrestlers and are into it, I'm sure wrestlers will tell you that this is the world class guy right here.
Now, are you, as someone who covers wrestling, enjoying this back and forth between Cena and Miz and The Rock, or are you wishing, like some of our listeners, that someone other than Cena would be in the spot, a la a John Morrison, or I'm going to get smacked by some fans, but I would like to have seen it Mania in some form or fashion. Bryan Danielson get his, sorry, Daniel Bryan. I know I have to call him that on the show. Daniel Bryan get some sort of redemption after all this time with Miz. Cause, I mean, I understand you've got to get butts in the seats, and Cena's name means a lot, Jim, but it goes back. I think it was like the last six or seven Manias. I know at 20 he wrestled Big Show for the U.S. title, but since then it seems like you can't have a Mania without Orton or Cena in the main. Is there a point where you've got to start getting some of these mid-card kids ready and giving them a shot like they're doing with Del Rio?
Well, you see, when back then too, you mentioned how Cena, right, was in the U.S. title match against the Big Show.
Mm-hmm. WrestleMania 20.
Right, and then you see how his career went. Well, that's what you got to do with some of the other guys, like you mentioned Morrison, some of those types and all. But I think if you're going to bring The Rock back, you got to put him with your number one guy. And again, whether you like him or not, he is the company's number one guy. But you think of it this way, too. Whether you agree or disagree with Miz as the champ, it also helps. This helps the Miz. This helps the Miz because you're putting your number one guy, Cena, and your former number one guy, or one of your top two, Austin Rock, with Miz. So this is a situation where when you look at it, they are trying to help somebody, and what they're doing is they're trying to help Miz, push him to another level and all. Morrison... I like John Morrison, but think of it. Morrison, Miz, and Rock. Just that, to me, this doesn't sound as good as Cena, Miz, and Rock. And you know, and your big event, your big event. Now maybe if they were doing that at another pay-per-view or a Monday Night Raw, okay. But you're talking WrestleMania and your biggest, and then two, if you want to, you know, for argument's sake, the number two guy could possibly be Orton. So, you know, and really he's getting pushed down a little bit. You know, a good program with Punk and all and that whole group. But, so they're not, so, you know, he's getting pushed out a little bit. Rock comes in and you got Cena. Because you could have Cena, Orton, and Rock. I mean, that would have been a lot stronger. But in this situation, they are trying to help somebody and elevate somebody. And in this case, they're trying to help The Miz. And if you look at the other way, I mean, Alberto Del Rio doesn't need it per se, but with the average fans and with WWE Universe, he does. So in their way, they're actually, you know, pushing Alberto Del Rio to another level by putting him in a title match against Edge, who is probably the number one guy over on the SmackDown brand, not just because he's champ, but just because he's probably the number, I take it back. Taker's probably the number one guy, but then Edge would be the number two guy for SmackDown. So you're helping Alberto Del Rio. So basically two main events are helping two guys. They're helping Del Rio, they're helping Miz, hoping that will help push them, so then three years from now, those guys could carry the ball, do what Cena had done, do what Rock and Austin. They won't do what they've done, but who has? But try to at least carry the company per se, that maybe they could do that, and then maybe someone will, you know, do that with Morrison, but Morrison, I don't know. You look at Miz and look at Morrison, and I see Miz with, Morrison has that appeal to the ladies, and he does some great moves and all, but I still give it to Miz for the mic skills. And the mic skills carry you a long way. So if you could hold your own in the ring, and Miz does, and you have the mic skills, well, that'll help you a lot more. And I think that, to me, is what's holding Morrison back a little bit from getting to that next level. And he'd be the one that these bigger stars are pushing and all. But Cena and Orton, they're still... Orton's still very young. Cena's still in his prime. So I think we're still going to see those two for a few more years. We'll run them with the ball, and then obviously they're going to try to help others. Edge says he's trying to wind down his career. Taker is going to be winding down his career at some... I mean, he doesn't wrestle that much anyway now. His body is just so banged up. You know, hopefully he'll make it to 20. 20-0 for him. And Triple H has said, and I know a lot of times... take these with a grain of salt when a wrestler says, a superstar says, I'm thinking of retiring, I'm thinking of retiring, and then they never do. And then if they do retire, they come back. And it's very rare that they don't come back for another match or do some, you know, just all-out retire. But Triple H says he is wanting to wind down and he is wanting to help elevate talent, like he tried to help Sheamus, and sure he'll try to help some others as well. So... It runs in cycles, and right now it's Cena, Orton, Edge, Mysterio. I forget Rey Mysterio. These are the top guys of the company, bringing back some of the top from the past and hoping that that'll elevate some of the other ones, like Del Rio, like a Miz, and whoever after that. Now, not having a lot of competition out there company-wise, it's hard. It's harder to even do that, but they're trying, and you know, they got FCW in your way over in Tampa, the feeder group to WWE Florida Championship Wrestling. So a lot of the guys, Dolph Ziggler's, your Jack Swagger's, Kofi Kingston's, Natalya, D.H. Smith, on and on and on, are coming from FCW, getting their training there, and they're, you know, being thrust right away into the spotlight, and then see what they could do. Sheamus was from there, another one, he was from that group too. So you're going to have a lot of, and there's a lot of second generation stars there right now. They're going to have an FCW show in Miami. We have the Dade County Youth Fair, Miami-Dade County Youth Fair, and FCW is coming down to Miami on Friday. Ricky Steamboat's going to be there signing autographs, and he's going to be watching his son Richie, who's been in the business about 3 years, trained with Harley Race, went to Japan, one of the dojos there, is training at FCW, and is another future WWE superstar. So, FC, and there's you know, you saw Husky Harris. There's another Rotundo, Mike Rotundo's IRS. His son.
I think it's Bo is his name.
Yes, that's it. And you've You've got Rikishi's. Oh, the Usos already. That's right. The Usos already elevated. Sorry about that. But
there's somewhere on TV.
There's
some,
there are a few more. There are a few more. Yeah, there are a few more that second generation wrestlers. I mean, SCW is filled with second generation wrestlers right now, along with others. And CWCW, I mean, we already saw, right, Cody Rhodes, Orton, DiBiase, saw a few of them that are, and more, from second generation. McGillicuddy with Henning and Husky Harris, of course, I mentioned already. You're seeing a lot of second generation stars. To me, that says that they're putting more stock into the lineage than others. Just by how many they're signing to FCW and how many are coming in to WWE, it's interesting to me that you're seeing so many more. Usually see one or two, but it's been a lot of second-generation wrestlers. So maybe they figure this is the way we're going to build some of the superstars with some name recognition from the past coupled with their new, their younger, their newer versions and different versions from their fathers.
I may change my last name just to see if I can get in the tour. And every time you turn around, it's like, I'm a third-generation star. I'm a fourth-generation star. My sister's brother's cousin's former roommate was a star. To make you nothing.
What do you think of Tough Enough? What do you think of Tough Enough? Because Stone Cold, they're doing 10 episodes of that.
They're already done
with production, right? They're already done with production. They did 10 episodes. But do you think it's going to be – I remember the original Tough Enough, and that was pretty serious stuff. I mean, there wasn't too many funny moments and all. I'm hoping this isn't going to be a mix of cheesy comedy and some serious stuff. I don't know. I'm hopeful.
The original season of Tough Enough, once you got them out of their shells, the Raw announcer Josh Matthews was always clowning with Al Snow and doing the whole circle game down around there. Doing the trick, you hold your hands down, I think it's your waistline spug, if you can get, you get the guys with that gag. I mean, I'm hoping, we know Matt Cross and Dog 20, who appeared in Wrestling Society X and was a part of the Jeff Peters Memorial Cup, is a legit wrestler in there. I'm interested to at least see a first couple, because, you know, the only two people that you know name-wise that came out of Tough Enough, we already talked about, and that would be John Morrison and John Hennigan, who was a part of season 3 with Matt Capitelli won, and then the season 4 that was on SmackDown, fans may not remember it, but some guy named Mike Mizanin was there. Yeah, The Miz was there. So, I mean, it's just weird, but you had a lot of people that came out of there, like Kenny King, who's in ROH now, is still trending around, but not many of those kids are still around. So, I mean, I find it weird that you have a Miss USA in there.
Yeah, Miss USA, that's what I was going to say. We saw Miss USA in there, and with Next on TV and then online, that they were doing these member trivia and the obstacle course and the kiss the lady. You know, they were doing all these things to try to get people to watch because it was different. Yeah, I'm hoping, that's what I mean. I'm hoping if they're doing stuff like, you know, making the guys run a lot and then, hey, this is what you gotta do, this you gotta do, and then, you know, see how much they can take, that type of thing. Yeah, that's fine. And, you know, that could be funny too, especially when it's not you in the situation. So I hope they're not gonna do a lot of these little cheesy contests and stuff.
I hope not.
Yeah, that are like reality TV-esque things that you
well know. Now it's the USA Network that's involved, and it's
right.
Amazing because we bring up marketing and stuff on the show all the time. We talked about it in the last couple of weeks when Mace was here, and Mace and I are big TNA fans, that so the weekend, I believe, like Law and Order, SVU, GOTV, whatever the heck the initials are on those, you're sitting there watching the weekend, and all of a sudden, hey, there's a promo for Tough Enough. You don't see that in TNA with their own flagship show, and this is a secondary or an ancillary product for WWE with, you know, the only names are Austin, Bill DeMott, Trish Stratus, and Booker T. I mean, we speculated on here who would possibly be a trainer, and it's interesting to see that I don't know if Austin's going to be just showing up for the elimination thing. He's going to be as interactive as Al Snow was, because when DeMott was on in season 3,
it was interesting, and unfortunately he was on the year that I believe it was Rocco, either Rock or Johnny Grunge, Public Enemy, had passed away, and it happened during the filming of that show, and DeMott went, yelled, I think he yelled at the kids at the house or something, and he went outside, and a few minutes later he came back in, and he was crying hysterically, and told the kids about what had happened, and it was just like, wow. And Bob Holly got humanized on that show. Dylan,
yeah, Bob Holly was at Matt, Matt Capitelli. That he just went crazy on. It was like one of those roid rage moments that he went nuts.
I don't know.
Kid.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I have to bring up the man crush of the other gentleman that's on the headsets here. And that would be Mr. Levesque, the new movie star, The Chaperone, now available at WWE.com. Going into this match at WrestleMania 27, something I've noticed, and my friends that go to live events have noticed and see me at events and say, something's not right here, Alan. I go, what's not right? And they go, they're making like these two have never wrestled. And I'm like, wait a minute. WWE WrestleMania Anthology, flip, flip, flip. Hey, look at that. Houston Astrodome, WrestleMania, yeah. They wrestled each other. In your view, why are they doing this? Is it just like they're saying, you know, I'm the last outlaw, and Triple H going, well, I've been here too, and it's like the two last gunslingers at the OK Corral? Why are they sweeping their match, other than it was an epic car wreck? And Spoke can agree. Can you agree, Elise, with that, that WrestleMania match that they had was a car wreck?
I can also agree that your microphone sounds like shit, and you need to get a new one before next week.
Of course it does. It's a new computer. So they're not interacting. It's an old headset with a brand new computer that they're going, I don't like you. Well, I don't like you either.
I mean, now, are you talking about Undertaker Triple H match?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Bulls Bard. Not starring Hulk Hogan.
Maybe it was the fact that who's going to do the job to Taker this time? Okay, I'll do it again. I liked the fact that when they did it though, neither one of them said a word, but everybody knew what was going on. It was just like so dramatic, and it was like I read stuff the next day like, why did they do that? Why didn't they talk? And you know, and then other people were like, hey, that was, you know, they didn't need to talk. Knew what was going on. That's all they had to do. Come out. Look, crowd goes nuts. The live crowd was into it the whole time. And then they, you know, we were all right, that's what they're setting for, WrestleMania, those two. Yeah, you know what, how many times have you seen that before? Remember when Sting came to TNA and they made a huge deal that it was, oh, Sting's in TNA, mm-hmm. and he's on TV? Well, yeah, do you remember 4 years later he was with TNA when they weren't on TV and they did the big anniversary show at the old Nashville, Asylum?
The Asylum,
right? And Sting, yeah, and it was like, well, wait a minute, this isn't really Sting's return, because he just returned a few years ago when he was here, so they redid that whole thing again for TV. So the only thing I could figure, though, is that they're figuring there's enough newer fans that won't go back. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but... won't go back that far, so they figure, all right, well, here we go again. So I'd be very surprised Triple H won. I mean, just very surprised. I mean, how bad would that be? Here you have
Triple H and the streak?
Yes, because think of it this way. It's not just Triple H. It's Triple H who works behind the scenes for WWE. He has a big job behind the scenes. You know, him and Stephanie are taking over the business when Vince McMahon finally decides that he's done, or, you know, God rest the soul, whatever happens, he passes away, he'll go to his grave owning the company, and then he'll pass it on. That, just what does it look like to all the other superstars backstage and all the fans if Triple H is the one that stops the streak? I think that would be the worst thing that could happen.
It's Kevin Nash and Goldberg streak is what you may be hinting
at. Wow, I forgot about that one, too. That was bad too, and that was the same. That was sort of the same type of thing. I mean, Nash didn't have the kind of power Triple H has, but he still had a lot of power backstage with Bischoff and that whole NWO thing that they were doing.
I always remember that audio where Kevin standing there going, "Whether you like it or not, I'm next."
I think
man, talk about that. Talk about a guy that just, I mean, came in and was this big guy and went through a couple of different characters that really, one was just awful, never worked. The other one was funny, but it didn't like really take off. And then all of a sudden he got to WWF and it took off. And then he did the whole NWO. And then, you know, after that, he ends up with TNA or comes back to WWE and then goes to TNA. And just, man, you think about it, how long he's been able to last in the industry, you know, but hey, if you know how to politic, you can last a longer time. And for him, he was a good politician, and you have to be. You know, people will say, that guy's such a good wrestler. How come he's not pushed? And why are they pushing this guy? Well, when you say that, then you answer your own question with, I know who the better politician is. That's why. So, it'll be interesting, though, to see. What do you think the main event is going to, what do you think the last match is going to be?
It's gotta be Miz. If the title's gonna change, I don't know if Spud can agree on this one. We were trying to figure it out once it got announced. It's probably gonna be Miz losing the belt to either. I mean, I don't want Marky Mark walking out with that belt. I don't want it. Sorokin is proclaiming it's Triple H Taker in his mind.
No, it's not in my mind. That's what's being reported on the interwebs. It is Triple H Undertaker that's closing the show.
Oh,
so
wow.
Again, so 2 years in a row, we're not going to have the World Championship or WWE Championship, or sorry, the M Championship, thanks to the Miz.
I didn't mind HBK and Taker closing the show, although would have rather they had closed the show 2 years prior, you know, the first time they met, because that was just an incredible match, even though it wasn't a title match. That was just unbelievable. And then last year, they held their own more than what I thought they would and the sequels aren't always best, but they did a really good job. I think I'd rather see Cena, Miz, and The Rock's involved, however he's going to be involved in the main event more so than any of the other matches. Is this the time? See, Rock's not going to be staying per se with WWE. So I was thinking originally that, well, maybe this is finally the time where they actually turn Cena back to a bad guy and see what happens there. But then I'm thinking, who's going to be the number one good guy then? Is it Randy Orton? You know, what are they going to do there? It's not Rock because, Rock will really not be there all the time. Does Rock help Miz? Which obviously is going to tick off a lot of fans because they don't like not so much Cena, but they don't like Miz, and then get because some people turn it on Rock. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that's all going to shake out.
I can see Sir Rock and the God of Internet is going here with Triple H Taker because as we hinted, Shawn Michaels is going into the Hall of Fame. And if you go to a certain site that I found that lists every WWE DVD release from now till the end of the year, if you go to the one that's listed for April 5th, it's D-Generation X, One Last Stand. So if you're going to end the streak, why not have Michaels come out in the end and help his DX brother-in-arms take out Taker?
You destroy a 20-year career for a DVD release. Not even Vincent Kennedy McMahon, who gave us Katie Vick and Mae Young giving birth to a hand, is that stupid.
I also think that this is totally Taker's call. If they even approach him with that, I think it's totally up to, I don't think it's up to Vince. Yes, Vince McMahon is the final say on everything, I know, and I've always said that, but I really believe that, I have no proof, but I really believe this, that this is one of those situations where they go up to Taker, and they lay out the plan, and they say, okay, this is how we want it to end, and he either is gonna say, okay, or, no, I'm not doing that, I'm going to win, et cetera, et cetera. So I really believe that. I really believe if he doesn't win, then that's him agreeing to do the job and end the streak. And if he disagrees or if he agrees that they want the streak to continue, then so be it and all. But I really think that the ball is totally in his court on this one.
I don't even think – I think if Triple H goes over on Taker, that smacks of a certain disrespect to the business from Triple H.
That's what I mean, too, because of his position backstage, it really doesn't make him look good to be the one to end the streak. And granted, he's done – no question about it, his career was not made – because he married Stephanie McMahon. This guy had already been main eventing and winning titles, and he was part of DX before any of that, so this is not one of those situations at all. I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is the person. If you're working behind the scenes in a high-level position, it's just like when you're a booker or a promoter and you're putting yourself in the main events, and you may be the big star, but you're putting yourself in the main events and you're winning the titles. It's sort of like, yeah, what are you doing here? You're 50. He's not 50, but I'm just saying you're 50 years old, and what are you doing? Why are you doing this and all? You know, hey, be quiet. I'm paying your money. There you go. here's your salary, so just shut up. honestly, though, with something like that, it really would not be a set of – and you know what? Triple H, to give his credit, I want to say 3 WrestleMania main events in a row he lost. Batista twice and Cena once, I believe. I'm trying to think of the history, but I know it, at least
we
3.
We can't talk about one of them because it involves a certain person.
Oh, that's why, yes. Then that's what it was, Batista. Well, maybe it was Batista twice and then that triple threat. Yeah, I remember that.
No,
okay, right.
Triple threat
was
triple
20.
Threat, Batista, Cena.
Okay. Yeah. Well, then 4 then. Well, then
didn't
4.
He lose Cena Orton too?
Yeah, well, he beat Orton.
No, it was the triple wasn't a triple threat Cena Orton Hunter? Wasn't that one of the main events?
Yeah, that was one of them too. He's lost a bunch.
You can't say that he's always, he's going to win because of his position. He's the son-in-law backstage. He has the power and all. Now, you know what? He's lost plenty and main event WrestleMania matches, not just a third match on the card or something like that. But I still think I agree with the legacy and all. You know, this is Taker's legacy. What do we remember Taker for? Do we remember for the world titles? You know, we remember the Mick Foley match he had, but really we remember Mick Foley more for that. What do we really remember Taker for? His entrances, just the way he's been. No, we remember him for the streak. That's what we remember Taker for. So is anyone going to just end that legacy? I mean, they could, but I'm just saying, when you're looking at it that way, do you say, hey, man, we're ending your legacy and your streak? No, everyone's still, you're going to be a Hall of Famer. You're still one of the greatest of all time. You did great for us, et cetera. That's why I say, I really believe that this is Taker's call.
If it's Taker's call, we'll get Sir Rock involved too in this. We'll go to all 3 of you. Who on the current roster, and I'm not talking the legends that have come back, on this current roster, if you're going to do a torch passing like you sometimes do with world championships to make someone, who on this roster, to Sir Rock and to Spug, then the Jim, is the one, the chosen one? There can be only one, and I'm not talking Jeff Jarrett. Who ends this streak? If you're Taker, who do you pick? Do you pick Wade Barrett? Do you pick Kofi Kingston? Do you pick Vicky Guerrero? I mean, who? Go Sir Rock and, please.
I'm going through the list of the roster in my head, and I honestly can't think of anyone that deserves it right now or that are built up enough even a year from now that deserve to beat the Undertaker.
Okay, because we, before I let Spug give his choice, back I believe it was around January, February, that Taker apparently went to a SmackDown taping and said, I want Wade Barrett at WrestleMania. And that was supposedly the avenue they were going to go down, and instead we turned down into the mean streets of Greenwich and got the Man Crush and Triple H, which I don't have a problem with, in case Spug's getting his axe and pick and torch ready to riot the house here. But give me someone who you think of the current roster, Spug. Is there anyone that can match the aura and the legacy that this guy has? So, I mean, yeah, Hogan's got a great legacy in WWF, but look at the longevity of this man. There's, I mean, Howard Finkel's the only one that's been around as long. And Vince. And the kids.
The perfect person to end Taker's streak when he retires is Ted DiBiase Jr.
Oh, that's right. Explain the lineage for fans that don't know it. Please do.
Ted DiBiase's father was the one who originated Undertaker into the WWF.
Survivor Series 90, I believe, and then he handed him off to Brother Love, I think,
to
for a
Brother
little while.
Brother Love and then Paul Bearer.
Yeah. If you're wondering where Brother Love is, look back at the Jeff Jarrett Karen Angle wedding and you'll go, that minister looks real familiar. That's why. Okay, we've saved the best for last. Who is worthy? Does Dusty Rhodes come out of retirement and go, I'm only one that can end the streak, baby. Yeah. I'm the king of the ring. I can do it, baby.
Oh, yeah, I get that. Dust stool and the crowd would go nuts. But no, not Dust. But wasn't, I gotta throw this in, wasn't he Kane the Undertaker?
Yes.
Originally, right? And then he just became the Undertaker, and then later on, we the birth of Kane, his brother, and all. You know, I like that. I wasn't thinking of DiBiase, but I gotta say, that's a really good one with the history and with Million Dollar Man bringing him in. I have no problems with that. I was gonna say, I'm just going to one of the guys now because he's young, but he's already a top star, is Randy Orton. I say Randy Orton would be perfect for that because he's the legend killer, and he is a guy that's on top of his game, and he's still relatively, I mean, they don't remember how young he one, he was, right, the youngest world champion ever for the company. This guy's still really young, but he's done so much already. I think he could be a guy that would be someone you pass the torch to, like that, from someone like that. But I have no problem with DiBiase either. That's a good one, too.
Yeah. On that note, it's getting close to the midnight hour, and we're glad that the fans have stayed with us here, and we've had a great chat going on wildtalkradio.com. For fans that aren't aware of it, give your information once again on how they can find your column on Miami. Is it MiamiHerald.com, or is there certain subdivisions they got to go to get
right?
To
exactly, as they all are. Yes, and it's MiamiHerald.com/sports/wrestling, and there are a lot of interviews and some columns, and there's a Q&A if people have questions. They could ask some questions. I don't have the answer to everything, but I do my best.
You made it sound like it tonight, you did.
Well, it's, you do the best you can. But,
All right.
So they can go there and do that and have some photos up there as well. We'll have an interview with Richie Steamboat, the son of the legend Ricky Steamboat. I'm working on that right now. And Scott's working on some stuff. We've got MVP coming to South Florida this Saturday, Davie, Florida. For an
That's
independent
right.
CCW show with Carlito. So we're working on Scott Fishman, who does a writer for the site as well. He is going to do something there. I'll probably be there as well. So we're going to do some of that. And I just wanted, since this is a WCW night, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Just wanted to say to everybody, a happy ding-dong to everybody. God.
If schedule permits him, the Miami Herald allows him, Jim will be here next week to give his predictions for WrestleMania along with Scott Fishman, possibly. So we'll hopefully talk to you next week. Thanks for calling in. We really appreciate it.
Okay, everybody. You all take care. All right.
Hey, Jim.
Care. There is Jim Barcelona, the Miami Herald,
like
MiamiHerald.com. Yep, Jim, if you've never read any of Jim's stuff, fans, definitely go to it, because I've known Jim on and off going back to 2003 when we met. I've talked with him several times when he was covering TNA. He would go to TNA every so often up in the Nashville area. And yes, back when TNA wrestling was good. And yes, I'm sorry we talk so much WWE kids, but because there really ain't much to talk about with TNA as we head towards WrestleMania. And yes, next,
the fact that our guest, you know.
Well, I'm not gonna go there. I'm gonna be the PC member of our group. I will let you know that next week's show will be WrestleMania geared. It will be our version of a WrestleMania preview. We will do some WWE, some TNA. We may possibly have Sid Vicious next week. We were supposed to have him last week, however, due to the flu. We lost him completely last week. and unfortunately was unable to track him down this week. Even the folks for the movie River of Darkness that were helping promote couldn't catch up with him, and we're hoping to have that. So we will have, I believe, Serenari Daigan from In This Very Ring will join us. Kevin Scott, Pookie Ray Ray, Big Steve, and Jamal will join us. So Spud can have
his just gotta call him Jamal.
Yeah.
Look, you can.
No! The whole Big Pookie Ray Ray, that's overplayed and retarded. Just call him Jamal.
Fine. Okay, Kevin as Jamal. He'll be guest starring as Jamal.
Thank you.
We could add him to the credits. And starring Kevin Scott as Jamal, the neighbor or something. He can have his own entrance thing and comedy and Suze and... Or man, you're in the chat room and you didn't even call in tonight, you punk. Because he didn't know it's WCW. He's like, I don't know WCW to talk about it. He says, or in Mandingo. He says that in the chat room. I'm not
calling you Mandingo because you don't have a fancy email.
Yeah, we're not going to go there because we don't want to have Oprah and everybody and Reverend Al calling us going, you're racist bastards.
Hurry up, Al. Let's get out of here. I've got to go to work in the morning.
Yeah, but you also have to get ready for the one and only heartbreak kid, Shawn Michaels.
Uh-huh. I can't wait for that.
Oh, you didn't play the Sherry version? Damn.
No way. The heartbreak kid tomorrow night. On Otaku Talk Live. Tune in.
You know the Canadians up there in Calgary, you know, swearing.
I know. But on this network, WildTalkRadio.com, the heartbreak kid, Shawn Michaels. Don't want to miss it. OTL.
I'm going to be really pissed if I have to work tomorrow and I sneak away at 12:15 to call in early to do this interview.
Uh-huh.
And it's somebody doing an impersonation of Shawn Michaels. I'll kill you. I will come to Philadelphia and kill you.
I got the extra confirmation tonight during the show. Shawn Michaels will be with us tomorrow.
All right. All right.
Epic. That is amazing to have that. For fans that didn't do it, you should have joined us for UFC 128, or is the one coming up 128, the one in Toronto, or is that 129? 129 is Toronto. Yes, I survived. I get to watch another UFC because the main event didn't end in a draw. It ended with a knockout punch to the temple, man.
A vicious knockout punch.
Yeah, I got to see a crow cop get beat after whooping some guy's butt for a couple of rounds. And Shogun Hua, I'm getting these names right. I was more for the holy crap moment of, because you had said, you were sitting there for fans that didn't listen, Spug and Mace and Spug were both going to me, if this thing gets out of the first round, this thing's in trouble. And sure enough, Shogun Hua and John Jones?
Johnny Bones Jones.
Yeah, the new champ of his weight class. And I'm sitting there going, yeah, I'm sitting there typing to Spug and we're talking on headphones and all of a sudden I'm going, dude, second round coming. He said, this is where it'll get fun. And sure enough, so tap outs and knockouts will go on whether Mace is here or not. Because
there's a fight night this week that I'm going to miss, and I'm kind of pissed off about it.
It's on. It's a Spike TV fight night?
Yeah. The main event is Mr. Wonderful, Phil Davis, who is from Penn State. He's fighting Antonio Minotauro Nogueira. And that, honestly, would be a really, really good fight, but I'm going to miss it, because I'm wrestling this Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. Where? Tell the fans where they can see Spug compete.
Nowhere around here.
Aww. You're not going to give away the secret location of the show?
No one is going to be around East Lake, Ohio to come see me wrestle. No one listens to this show in Ohio.
How do you know?
Nobody listens to this show in Ohio.
Damn.
Nobody listens to WTR in Ohio.
They do in Iowa.
I'm tripping, brother.
They do in Iowa. They do in Iowa. So, more people in Iowa.
In Iowa, not Ohio.
People said the road trip. That's what they're saying in the chat room.
Absolutely.
Yeah, road trip to East Lake, Ohio. You know what? Here we go. Here we go. I'll pull up the information on my phone for you.
While he does that, I have it right here.
Hold on.
Okay, do it.
Do it. Relax. Let's see. NCWE on Saturday night presents. Jesus Christ! There's the ad. There's no title for the show. It's just NCWE presents. It's at 3465 Malins Parkway, East Lake, Ohio. Doors open at 6:30. Bell time's at 7:30. Come, enjoy, have fun. I believe it all goes to charity. This show does, anyway.
There you go. So, listen to OTL tomorrow night, 9 o'clock.
Yes.
There'll probably be another Mace clip of him giving his future endeavors, and so long, and thanks for the fish.
Most likely, and yeah, probably could felt the fish, because you gotta keep it kosher.
Exactly.
And tune in Saturday night for CB Radio, midnight-ish, join myself, Rob Parks, Subway, and whoever else decides to show up on the show, and you never know what the hell we're gonna talk about, because we don't till like, the show starts.
Are you guys legally allowed not to give away Tim Sine's stuff anymore, or are you still able to give away some stuff?
I'm allowed to give away his stuff anytime I choose.
Interesting. Most interesting.
I came up with a damn segment.
He did. We're allowed to give it away anytime we want. Right, Spug?
Right.
Yeah.
I invented the damn segment.
He did. And we
copyrighted. Damn it. Copyrighted. Yeah. Now, there is a merchandise site. Before we talk about...
EWA.shopzone.com?
CBRadio.EWAZone.com.
Well, I was close, whatever.
Yeah,
and you can get some really cool shirts. I believe there's a mesh shirt. There may be something along with a knuckle possibly coming that Mace's dad wanted.
Bleep knuckle shirt.
Exactly.
And
that would be it.
And a Godfather Extreme keychain. Buy it. CBRadio.EWAZone.com.
Yeah, and don't forget Sunday nights on a non-pay-per-view Sunday, WrestleTalk Radio will be back with Spug. With Omega, possibly Will, with
no,
Tim
just,
Stein.
No, just Omega and Spug and Tim Stein.
As they yeah. Talk
pro, they no, talk, Omega?
No, I said Omega and Spug and Tim Stein.
Oh, okay.
We need to find a fourth voice for that show.
We will.
You need fourth Beatle. Are you holding open auditions? That would be
that's, here we go, here we go. Here's what I'll pimp. If you're listening to this network right now, or this podcast at nine time, if you would like a part in Wild Talk Radio Network, send us a 2-minute interview, a clip of yourself promoting something. Shill for us. Tell us why you deserve the job. And plus a shill show. 2 minutes. Win Mace's job.
And if you're a Jew, that's bonus shilling points.
Indeed.
Because Jews automatically know how to shill. Ask Tim.
Ooh, so it's not... So you're getting a chance to earn the spot.
The spot. Win Mace's job. Win Mace's job. Give us a 2-minute
He's not gone permanently, is he?
No, but it's just, you know, it was Mace's idea for the 2-minute shill. So let's go. All right.
But, all right. Still, like, we're trying to fill Arn Anderson's spot since this is WCW night.
And since it's WCW night, we have to end with one theme and one theme only.
Oh, God.
Disco Fever.
Yes!
Yes! Awesome. I'm feeling the vibe. I'm feeling a sudden urge. And it's not the fat chick Thriller thing that I'm feeling. Thank you so much to Scott Hudson for being with us. We're sorry that Buff Bagwell couldn't stick around as long as he did. We're very happy Jim Barcelone phoned in. Very happy. We had a very exciting chat room tonight that needs to call in. Dial us. We don't bite. And as I like to say, thanks to Spoke for helping out tonight, Sir Rockin' Behind the Glass, Tim Stein, Jason Dedrich, Brad Dykens. Thanks to everyone that ever worked for World Championship Wrestling, going all the way back to the Crocketts. I'm Alan Wojcik. I may not be on 24/7, but my show's better than yours, bitch.
Disco Fever! Disco Fever! Yeah!